Begin on time and welcome everybody to today's hearing. I'd like to welcome our distinguished committee members and thank you very much for agreeing to serve as a part of this committee, and thank you to those people who have come to testify today. We really very much appreciate your input and thank you very much. We're here today because I think we all have a common goal, and that's to provide the highest quality, dignified care to those people in our state with mental illness. And today's hearing really does mark an important step toward restructuring Oregon's mental health care system to do just that. But today, and the one thing I'd like to be clear on, is that we are focusing on one piece of the mental health care system, and that's on the construction of new state hospital facilities. And that really brings me to the charge of the committee, so we're all clear on what we are here to do. And our charge is to finalize site selection criteria by September 1. And those criteria will go to the Department of Administrative Services, and they will use those to create a list of suitable sites, which will be given to the executive branch for review, and recommendations will be made to the appropriate legislative committee for final site selection to take place by the end of the 2007 legislative session. So our charge is limited to the site selection criteria, and our agenda today is we're here today to hear from the KMD architects, who we'll hear from shortly, about their review of the state's mental health system, to take public comment and testimony regarding the plan to have a 620-bed facility in the North Willamette Valley, a 360-bed facility south of Linn County and west of the Cascades, and at least two 16-bed facilities east of the Cascades. And following that public testimony, we'll be briefed by the Department of Administrative Services about what they will be looking for us to do regarding the selection criteria. And that will, in essence, begin our work. So that's, I hope, some clarity on what we're here to do. We're not here to discuss funding of buildings and services. We will not be picking a site. We will only be picking the criteria around which suitable sites can be chosen from. And likewise, we will not be discussing some of the larger issues of the redesign of our mental health care system. There are some other forums to do that, and I'll get to those in a moment. I'd look to us to have three meetings. Our charge is to be done by September 1. And the three meetings are today, where I've just outlined the agenda. We'll also have some homework, which I'll get to at the end of the meeting. A meeting August 1st, where we will discuss the committee criteria, a discussion about how we might weight those criteria. We'll take some public testimony at that meeting about the criteria and what we should consider. And then we'll reconvene on August 29th, at which point we'll make final decisions as to those criteria and their weighting. And I think that the whole issue of how we will develop the criteria and what is expected will become clearer this afternoon when the Department of Administrative Services walks us through their presentation as to expectations. Let me stop there for a moment and see if there's any questions from the committee. Okay. A couple of other quick items then. One is that I know that there is, and appropriately so, a tremendous interest in some of the larger issues regarding our mental health system. And our charge is limited, but we will be having two work groups that will be convening from the Department of Human Services, which will provide an opportunity for input regarding some of those larger issues. And those two work groups are, number one, a work group to look at community services in the state, community mental health services. And that group will review the need for community mental health and extended residential services and really look at the front-end community services that are needed in our communities in Oregon so that we can complement what is a plan to build 980 beds of hospital facilities. And we'll be convening that group as well as a group to look at the particular needs of Eastern and Central Oregon and the long-term psychiatric needs of the population in Eastern and Central Oregon, and recommend to the department the services that are needed to meet the needs of individuals in those areas. And if there are any legislative members on this committee that are interested in being members of either of those work groups, let me know as we begin to convene those. Lastly, and probably most importantly, we need to adopt rules about how we're going to operate. And we've taken the liberty of drafting some interim rules really fashioned after a sort of melding of House and Senate interim committee rules. And I'd ask committee members to take a moment to look through those. They're in front of you. Senator Courtney.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt the Joint Interim Oregon State Hospital Siting Selection Criteria Committee Rules.
Second.
So seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Great. We have rules. We have a charge. We have a great audience. So why don't we...
Could I just say,
yes.
You got a cheat sheet in front of you. It's great. You said something about rural Eastern Oregon. Maybe all the members understood that. If you got anything like that in writing, I'd like it distributed because
sure. That
might interest some of us in terms of our involvement or at least thinking of others that might want to get involved, because that's a big part geographically of our state and, you know, the sensitivity, geographic sensitivity to all. Thank you. Thank you very much to all these issues. So that went quickly by me. I thought all of you probably made copious notes, but it went by me quickly.
Right.
But you keep reading from this beautiful cheat sheet. I don't have it in front of me.
I'm happy to provide you
I'm not trying to mess you up because you're doing a brilliant job.
Are you trying to tell them in the Senate we don't use cheat sheets?
Well, I just couldn't keep
it's
up.
It's all unraveling already.
This rule, or you said something about Eastern and Central Eastern.
Yes.
I just want to know a little bit about this.
I will. We're in the process of putting together those groups as well as clarifying their charge. And over this week, as we do that, I will get the charge and to all the members of the committee.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. With that, I'd like to, unless any other questions or comments? Great. I would now like to turn things over to three individuals who have worked with us on the Oregon State Master Plan to walk us through the Phase 2 recommendations, and they are Thomas Gross, James Mueller, and Cecily Lomar. And I hope I pronounced your names correctly. We'll ask you to restate them for the record, and we'll turn it over to you.
My name is Jim Mueller.
I'm Cecily Lomar.
I'm Tom Gross.
Great.
Good morning, Honorable Chair, Madam Administrator, Representatives, and Senators. My name is Jim Mueller. I'm a principal of the firm of Kaplan McLaughlin Diaz and also a member of its board of directors. Early in the year of 2005, the team of Kaplan McLaughlin Diaz, the New Heights Group, and RM Consulting were engaged by the Department of Human Services for the state to produce a framework master plan for the Oregon State Hospital. A little bit about who we are. Kaplan McLaughlin Diaz was founded in 1963 in San Francisco. Since 1985, we have been ranked as one of the 10 largest healthcare and mental health professional service providers in the United States. We are an internationally practicing organization providing health care, mental health services, and designs in Asia and throughout the United States. So that's over 50% of our workload consists of health care, facility design, and planning. The New Heights Group, represented by Cecily, is a nationally renowned programming and needs assessment organization providing services throughout the United States relative to healthcare and mental health facilities. The RM Consulting Group, represented by Bob McQuirk, who is not here today as he only participated in the Phase 1 report, is well known throughout the state of Oregon for providing needs assessment programming and planning services both at the state level and at the county level. We were engaged to produce initially the Phase 1 report of the Framework Master Plan. We started that process in March of 2005, and we completed that report, which is this report, in May of 2005. During the course of those intervening months, members of the team interviewed over 150 stakeholders throughout the state relative to the mental health service system within the state of Oregon. And we also interfaced on a periodic basis with a specially convened steering committee to offer observations about the progress we were making through the Stage 1 report and soliciting both their input, their recommendations, and their comments relative to the work that we were doing. The assessment of the Oregon State Hospital, specifically the Salem campus, focused initially on the physical conditions of the buildings at that site, particularly relative to those buildings that were designated to provide patient care. All of those buildings were constructed between 1883 and 1955, so they have, by normal architectural standards and industry standards, well exceeded their normal life expectancy. None of those buildings comply with current energy or building codes, and subsequently they are both inefficient and very expensive to manage. Most of those buildings do not comply with the requirements of the American Disabilities Act. All of those buildings are not in compliance with current seismic code to the extent that in the event of a significant seismic event, the results could be catastrophic, to include the possible failure and collapse of Building J. None of those buildings also are consistent with current and modern planning and design standards relative to secure psychiatric facilities. The wards are inefficiently planned, they do not provide adequate program space, and they are not in compliance with Oregon State's own psychiatric patient care requirements. They, in fact, are adverse in their planning to the successful implementation of psychiatric programming. They do not support modern modalities of treatment, and they are, in fact, unsafe for both staff and for patients. Further, the renovation of those facilities would be very, very cost prohibitive. And in the event that you did, in fact, renovate them and spend that amount of money, they'd still be a compromise in terms of the provision of care to mental health patients in the state. So the report, that initial phase run report, came to certain conclusions that the state should proceed concurrently with the rebuilding of the Oregon State Hospital and at the same time continue the reconfiguration of state and community-provided services for mental health patients consistent with the governor's mental health task force recommendations. The report also included three potential options. First option was to build a new centralized Oregon State Hospital to provide for the care of civil, forensic, and geriatric patients, supported by a comprehensive system of community-based alternatives. The second alternative, second option was to build a new state security hospital focused on forensic patients and provide care for civil and geriatric patients at either or both the Portland campus and the Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center in Pendleton or through some other facilities. The third option was to provide a series of regional facilities throughout the state at a smaller scale. Finally, the Phase 1 report made certain recommendations. It recommended that the state and Department of Human Services proceed with the Phase 2 report of the master plan. and it indicated that that phase two report should include certain things. It should include patient population projections through a planning horizon of 2030. It should make recommendations relative to the role that the Oregon State Hospital would take within the new system of healthcare or mental health care services throughout the state. It was supposed to make a recommendation relative to the number of Oregon State Hospital facilities and their potential locations. And also, we were to produce pre-architectural diagrammatic relationship diagrams relative to the hospital itself. K&D and New Heights was then subsequently engaged to continue with the Phase 2 report of the master plan. That Phase 2 report was initiated in August of 2005 and was completed in February of this year, 2006. This is a copy of that report, which I believe most of you have seen. The Phase 2 report was intended to clarify the role of the state hospital within the mental health service delivery system within the state of Oregon. As in the Phase 1 report, the team interfaced on a periodic basis with the steering committee, the original steering committee, a newly constituted advisory committee, and also proceeded to interview a multiplicity of stakeholders within the system. Today's presentation will focus on the consequences of that team's investigations as represented in the Phase 1 report and what it then produces in the way of recommendations relative to the development of the Oregon State Hospital. A few quick contextual comments. First of all, as the team proceeded through its research relative to the Phase 2 report, it became clear that one could not address improvements at the Oregon State Hospital unless one looked at the reconfiguration and the potential restructuring of the entire mental health delivery system within the state of Oregon. The state hospital's role would be a consequence of how that structure was developed and was implemented. Finally, the demographic projections contained in that report, upon which the recommendations in that report are based, presume that there will be a substantial enhancement of community-based alternatives in order to provide for the early discharge of patients from the Oregon State Hospital and thereby minimize the potential increase in size required for that facility in the future. So I'd now like to present to you Cecily Lomar and Tom Gross, who will continue with the balance of our presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. I want to spend just a few minutes talking a little bit more about the background within which we made the recommendations that we made in Phase 2. Let me first start at a very high level and mention the commitment that Oregon has made to shifting the delivery model of care for those with chronic and persistent mental illness from a more traditional, what I would call medical model, where you treat the episode of illness, to more of a recovery model of care, which is a recognition that this is indeed a chronic illness that these people are living with, and in fact, to enhance treatment, you need to treat it as such. In other words, we need to not only address the episode of care that has brought them either to the state hospital or whatever setting they have been admitted to, but also help them deal with the illness on a daily basis and give them the skills they need to manage that illness throughout their lifespan. To do that, it really requires a much greater focus on living within the communities that they are going to ultimately go back to, interacting with those communities, being comfortable in those communities. So that focus is a shift from a more centralized approach to the state hospital and the delivery of care to a much more community-oriented model of care, recognizing that that's what's needed to get these individuals back to leading more productive lives in their home communities. And that was a premise that we all used moving forward, and you will see in the recommendations. The other piece that I think is important to note is when we looked at the current distribution of state hospital beds within the state, there's an inconsistency that exists. The state hospital beds are not necessarily placed right now where the population is and where the people who are using those beds live. And in fact, you often have individuals who have to travel significant distances across the state to receive care in one of the three state hospital campuses. So again, there's a maldistribution that is occurring. The hospital beds are not where the individuals live who are going to be using those beds. I think Jim has already articulated, and the Phase 1 report went through pretty significantly, the fact that the Salem campus facilities really are not going to be adequate. They're not adequate now, nor will they be in the future for providing long-term care needs for those with chronic and persistent mental illness. Another important component that we made, and you'll probably hear a fair amount more about it as this process continues, and that is that the average length of stay, the number of days, weeks, whatever, that an individual is in the state hospital system right now, is really longer than is clinically necessary for many of those patients. And the reason for that is because we do not have adequate community resources for which to refer those patients to. So if an individual is in the state hospital and after, say, for example, 100 days is ready to go back to a community environment, there's no community setting for them to go to, and as a result, they stay in the state hospital longer than they need to. Not the case for everybody, but it's certainly the case for many. And that's very inconsistent with the recovery model of care and the community orientation that we are trying to develop in this state. So there's clearly this need to provide more community-based resources. In addition, because people are in the state hospital longer than they need to be, we've created this logjam in the system whereby people can't get in because people can't get out. We've only got so many state hospital beds, and you've got people waiting in acute hospital beds in their in a variety of acute care hospitals throughout the state who need to get into the state hospital but can't because there are no beds available because we can't discharge patients in a timely manner. So we've really got a system of care that isn't working because we've got one logjam in the system.
Question. And I think, Mr. Chair, just on that very line, I have been told that the majority of patients at the state hospital are forensic patients, and that they are kept at the hospital because there's no beds in the jail system to care for them at that. Is that true or not?
The forensic patients, actually, part of that is true, that the higher percentage or most of the patients in the state hospital system are indeed the forensic population, but they are in a different system than the Department of Corrections patients. They will not be going back to a jail setting. They will be discharged from the state hospital to a community-based setting. And once again, there are not those community-based settings to discharge those patients to, and as a result, they stay an extraordinarily long time. The forensic patients have the longest length of stay at the state hospital. Thank you. Good question. A couple of other, again, just basic assumptions and foundation that we needed to deal with in addressing the recommendations. One is that the Portland State Hospital campus, we are leasing that building. That lease will expire in early 2015, I believe, and there is no plan necessarily for where we go from there. So we have that variable that we needed to contend with. And then finally, what we were working around as a programming team was that probably the earliest that we could get a new campus, new facilities up and running would be 2011. So that was the year that we were working with. I want to talk just a little bit about the actual need projections that went into developing the recommendations and sizing the facilities the way we did. There are a couple of very, very key assumptions that go into that. I can't emphasize enough that the way we looked at this was as a system of care. It's not just the state hospital. The state hospital is a pivotal piece of the system of care for the mentally ill in this community. And so we needed to address that system of care. We made the assumption that if we can develop adequate community resources, length of stay at the state hospital would go down. And there are some pretty significant decreases in length of stay that were made. But that is contingent on adequate facilities being available in the community. And I recognize that's not the charge of this particular task force, but I think it's important for everybody to understand. In addition, we are hoping that same use or investment in the community-based resources and infrastructure in the community will also, to some degree, limit the number who need to come into the state hospital. If we can address their needs earlier in their crisis state, their condition may not get to the point where they need state hospitalization. So we made those assumptions as well, that to some degree there will be a decrease in the rate of those who need to come into the state hospital system. The final assumption that we made is that that distribution of the beds really needs to be consistent with the population. We want to be able to provide care for these individuals as close to their home communities as we can. So that was a very important assumption that we made moving forward and looking at the different site options.
Thanks, Cecily. As we've mentioned, the focus of the report was a shift to the recovery model of care with the concept that in the right situation, people can and do get better. They don't have to spend their lives in a hospital or in an institutional facility. To achieve that, we have to deal and consider the patient as well as staff safety and security. It needs to be a place where healing can occur, not where people are simply confined. But true healing can occur. It's a place where recovery exists. And the environment, the thing that's important, and it affects the site selection, the environment must be one that assists the people who are taking care of those in the hospital to do their job well, but it also for the patient so that they can experience the range of things in society that help them develop the skills that are necessary for their own level of development, whatever that might be, so that they can exist on the outside world and be productive members as they want to be. We want the facility, and I think Oregon has every right to expect it to be a center of excellence. It should be leading the way. Oregon has a reputation, even though we may be small in numbers, we're great in leading the nation in certain ways. And I think that we have a real ability, and I think we have a real charge here to develop probably the best mental health system and certainly the best mental health hospital in the entire nation. Part of the way that will be done, and it does affect the site, it is affected by the site, is how the patient living units, that unit of the hospital where the patients will spend most of their time in sessions, in learning, if we can develop something that is flexible so that it allows for continuing utilization. That's part of the problems we see in the existing facilities, is that they were designed to be very rigid. It's this kind of way, and if you try to change it, the architecture simply doesn't allow that. So the idea is to allow a facility and its site that will give some flex, that over the years, as we have changed now from certainly 1880s, but even the 1950s, as we have progressed in our understanding of treatment of mental illness, we need to develop facilities that will not restrict that development, but will indeed respond to that kind of system. Some of the things that we're dealing with are some high-risk issues, those that are particularly dangerous to themselves or perhaps to others. The Department of Corrections would like to have a few units. These are all issues that you need to be have in consideration while you're selecting your site criteria. As I mentioned before, in order for patients to reach their potential, as with anybody in society, we need to experience a variety of vocational education, training, education of all sorts. The thing that's been so impressive to me throughout this process is the peer support, the involvement of people who have been through the system and in fact may still be within the system, but they're so willing to help others coming along, give them opportunity to do that in a more structured way. I it is an incredible opportunity that we have. This involves indoor-outdoor recreation, dealing with our spiritual nature, our education, our library, just giving all sorts of options for life, because that's what life is like outside of the walls of any institution. In that same regard, staff amenities, they need to be secure. They need to feel that they can come and be very interactive with the patients. But if there is a crisis developing, they need to be able to know that they have a secure component, a place where they can escape. And we also find that actually with the improvement in types of living units, that the need for staff security is lessened. Finally, it's a campus that Oregon should take pride in. It should have very clear, understandable access, not only for the patients, but for their families and visitors. It should be accessible to public. It should be accessible to public transportation. Employee parking, unfortunately, as society continues, not because of the hospital, but just because of society in general, we're finding that we have to provide more and more secure parking for employees. Amenities, a park-like setting we mentioned, this will also help in the way neighborhoods accept the facilities. The thing that we need to remember is that indeed it is a hospital. It is a place of healing. It's an environment for recovery. It is not a prison. It is not a jail. It is a hospital. To see Oregon into the future, to not have to rebuild, there are some things that we need to do. And among them is to provide a site that allows expansion, allows flex, as I've mentioned before. What we have suggested in our report is that we provide beds initially by 2011 that would equal the number of beds that we project would be needed by 2021 to allow even more opportunity. Things are never going to be cheaper to build than they are right now. So we're suggesting that we then also include a facility infrastructure that would allow future expansion, and that that would be sized to our projected 2030. These kinds of advantages would then keep the hospital viable for quite some time. As I mentioned, one of the really outstanding components within the Oregon system now is a growing peer mentoring component. This could involve, to encourage this and to continue it, would involve library, a sense of place, people where they can get together, discuss. There should actually be perhaps a training site for the mentors themselves, so that they can, among themselves even, learn from one another. One of the serious effects that those with mental illness also deal with is what we call dual diagnosis, which means that they also often will have a drug or alcohol problem and associated with that. So it's important that those counseling them not only deal with the root mental illness, but also with some of the other attendant issues. The issues around this that deal with site is that it could be that there are a lot of options that allow for this great enhancement of living quality while they are at the hospital. It includes perhaps even running their own store. We have the Kermaine's issue, if you will, that still needs to be developed. I understand there's a task force set aside to look at how that might be done. Perhaps a museum on the site of one of these campuses would be an appropriate consideration. As I mentioned, we are recommending that the facilities be sized to the 2021 expected level of beds, with the infrastructure to the 2030. Again, patients need to be accessible to the positive support of their friends and families. Oddly enough, we find that the communities that are largest also have the largest number of people with mental illness. Oregon's demography is, well, are, as you all know, places approximately 90% of the population on the west side of the Cascades. That's why, in our recommendation, we suggest that the two main facilities be located west of the Cascades, and that two 16-bed, at least two 16-bed secure residential facilities be placed on the east side to take care of the acute and long-term needs of that portion of the state, which is dear to my heart.
Representative Dalton.
Thank you, Mr. Colbert. Question about the capacity plan for 2011. How did you arrive at that date, that year?
We thought that 2011 was about the earliest, given the processes, about the earliest we could actually get a hospital up and running physically.
I'm sorry, I misstated my question. My question was about 2021. Oh. You're building out the 10-year capacity.
We didn't want to build a facility that was immediately too small, and so we gave it a 10-year expected projection so that we are indeed building a facility that can accommodate people for the next 10 years, perhaps beyond.
But that's clear. Is it customary that projects like this would look 10 years out or 20 years out or even...
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You rarely build for where you are right now because it's...
I understand that. My question is it customary that other institutions would be planning for 10 years out as opposed to perhaps a longer period of time where there would be additional capacity?
Practically any new medical facility you find being built is the initial construction allows it a certain amount of growth within their projections. How far out they go depends on the organization. 10 years is a very normal thing. Some do for 5 years, some do for 15. To project more than that is you're starting to play with some issues that may not occur. But we thought that it would be safe to say, given historical data, that that the facilities will need to grow, and that's why we suggested that the infrastructure, the more expensive components, if you will, of the facility be designed to handle the 2030 projected bed need. But we wouldn't build actual facilities for that.
Representative Delto, it's normal this facility type or other facility types, whether it be justice facilities or whatnot. 5-year projection, pretty confident. You can do that. 10 years, you can be optimistic that you're going to be close. 15 to 20 years, you're guessing. The fact is you're guessing. The world changes in 10 to 15 years. We can anticipate legislative adjustments, policy changes, those sorts of things that may affect the population growth in these patient environments. So it would be not a reasonable or prudent thing to recommend going out beyond 10 years for fear that you're going to overbuild potentially a facility that through a variety of things such as a community-based service system you may be able to manage that population effectively. You won't truly know that for a period of time, but we don't want to build anticipating that's not going to happen and this facility will have to grow.
Representative Jensen had a question.
I think that following along a little bit with Representative Dalton's questions, I had some concern with where we came up with the numbers, the projected numbers type of thing. And to cut to the chase very quickly on that, let me tell you what specifically one of my concerns is. Currently, I think in the state of Oregon, we are housing in the Department of Corrections something in the neighborhood of 20%, plus or minus some change, of their whole caseload that are there because of mental illness. Where in your projections did this population come into the equation, or did we just make the assumption that the Department of Corrections will continue to do a substantial portion of the mental health work in the state, and we're going to have two mental health delivery systems then?
I can address that. I think that's a very valid question. We made the assumption that the Department of Corrections would continue to have a mental health component within their system because there was not a mechanism during this process to assume otherwise. That said, I think it's important to understand there are indeed two separate systems of care within the state, but the Department of Corrections individuals are there, I guess more technically speaking, they have been found guilty of a crime and in addition to that have been diagnosed with some level of mental illness, as opposed to the forensic population that we see within the state hospital facilities who have been found guilty except by reason of insanity. And so, in other words, they are being treated at the state hospital and they are admitted to the state hospital to be treated for that mental illness. They are not being incarcerated at the state hospital, so to speak. So, yes, indeed, to answer your question, we do have those two systems of care, but they have been created. It has been an intentional system. The Department of Corrections has, as Tom mentioned, has requested that they have some beds at the state hospital for patients or for inmates that they do not feel comfortable handling within the Department of Corrections.
Mr. Chair, this may be exactly appropriate now, but I think this is a question that needs considerably more discussion on part of the Department and the legislature. An assumption is being made that I'm not personally happy with, and I don't want to bog this discussion down with it, but only to point out that I'd like to see some avenue for further discussion on this.
I think that that's a discussion we can have as we look at the larger mental health care system and can include that as part of that, because I believe that that's inherent is that in that is some of the policy decisions that the state may or may not make. Absolutely.
I thought, Leslie, that KMD is recommending that, since you referenced it, 20 beds and that 620.
That's correct.
Is it 40 or 20?
We're suggesting that initially it be one unit of 20.
Right.
And in the future there would be a development of perhaps another unit.
Right. I just wanted to reference that. That partially answers the question in terms of this concern of individuals in DOC that have serious mental health issues. It still doesn't deal with if it's 20%, it's a constant fluctuation in terms of experts, it seems to me, as to what percentage are within that system that have serious mental health issues. But I understood in terms of specific beds, it was 20, and now you've explained the 40 is, I believe the 40 as well, which is a speculative figure. The 20 is absolute, the 40 is speculative beyond the 20, right? Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jensen.
I appreciate Senator Courtney's comments and the explanations of it. I think the 20-bed issue and how many Department of Corrections may or may not have and whether or not this is an appropriate place for it is another discussion.
Duly noted.
The graphic here, I think, helps us understand a bit more about why our recommendations for the hospital are as they are. In the North Willamette Valley and the North Coast, approximately 55% of the population of the state of Oregon resides in this area. On the three counties that make up the North Coast, the Columbia, Clatsop, and Tillamook counties, that makes up about 3% of that 55%. We've got then 38% of the people of the population of the state of Oregon living somewhere along the I-5 corridor. Klamath and Lake counties are included in that simply because they can go either direction but primarily go west, and that's changing. That is changing. Then we've got about 7% of the state living in the remaining essentially half of the state. This is an important graphic because one of the assumptions, one of the evaluations that has been made is that those with mental illness do better closest to their home communities. Among the challenges for the Oregon State Hospital. The location of it is that there is nationwide a shortage of qualified professionals, psychiatrists, psychologists, nurses. Oregon needs to attract the best. We need to retain them after we've got them. So it is incumbent upon us in selecting a site then to provide locations that are going to be beneficial to them. Not all of them want to live in a major urban area, but a significant number do. We must provide the not only challenging work, but professionally challenging work, which also includes contact with their own peers, competitive compensation, but then they have families, and so we need to provide them the best of schools, healthcare, recreation, etc. Among the other challenges is going to be community acceptance. It's the NIMBY issue, not in my backyard. But indeed the state I think as a component of citizens we do care about our citizens, and so I suspect that that won't be an overwhelming challenge. We also have to locate the facility where there is workforce available or where the workforce is willing to be. Perhaps there's utilization of state lands that that might be considered. One of the things I want to mention is that the construction cost estimate, the project cost estimate that we mentioned in phase two, do not include any purchase of land.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Delta.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before we move on to the next slide, I'm sort of still on the slide talking about basic considerations for location, and I didn't want the opportunity to escape us without asking whether or not you consider geography in the considerations. I don't see it listed as a criteria, but I think you'll find as this process moves forward that geography is going to play an issue with some of my colleagues, certainly in the House. Wherein perhaps 7% of the patients are, or the 7% of needs is going to come from central eastern Oregon, but you're talking about a territory that's very great in distance, separated from the rest of the state by long distances, but also pretty serious weather conditions in the winter and so forth. And so I think that in some cases, it may be practical to move people around that area, and I'm wondering, I know that you spoke with quite a few people, more than a couple of hundred, in putting this report together. I'm wondering how much time you spent speaking with people in the eastern portions of the state. I mean, this, you're talking about territories that are larger than several states, other states, so very concerned and curious about your work with that question.
We spent a fair amount of time, Representative Dalto, speaking to folks in the central and eastern part of the state for just that reason. They do have different challenges that they are dealing with in managing this patient population, and we certainly recognize that. To that end, they have done and already created some rather creative mechanisms for managing these patients and for addressing them or dealing with them earlier in their illness. So we incorporated some of their suggestions, actually, into our recommendations, and that had to do with the front-end services, the community-based services. Those are the resources that they need most out there, as opposed to some big central facility. They need access to local services, to residential treatment services, such as we have recommended, that can be dispersed a little bit more in this rural geographic area. Because you're right, if we were to place one central facility in all of those counties of central and eastern Oregon, they're going to be accessible to only a very few, and still everyone else will have to drive a pretty significant amount of time. So those community-based resources become even more important out in the eastern and central part of the state.
Representative Dalto, if I could just interject, we are having a group to look at the specific issues of Eastern Oregon that we had spoken about when the committee started, that as part of this process, the department will be convening a group that will look at the unique needs of Eastern and Central Oregon, and members of this committee are welcome to be a part of that discussion as well, because indeed there are some particular needs that need to be addressed. We're going to go to Senator Winters, then Mona Sanderson, then Representative Barker.
Just a comment for the committee, and it might be well, Mr. Chair, if you would provide the members with a report of the governor's mental health task force which Senator Carter and I were both on. It might help give some further background information to this group and maybe answer some of the questions if every member has.
We'll do that. Great suggestion.
And a comment. I know that a number of the hospitals have psych beds, so to speak, but they can't take very many because they don't have the staff. So I was wondering, in this report, were you working with the hospitals in Eastern Oregon, or is this going to be a part of the committee that will be looking at it? Because I know they need more resources to care for the mentally ill that come into the hospital.
Correct. And the answer to the question would probably be both. We did work with the hospitals and spoke to the hospitals, both in Eastern Oregon as well as west of the mountains as well. And further additional work needs to be done to include the hospitals, because they are clearly the safety net in many instances for those patients, no question.
Representative Barker, Representative Jensen, and Aaron Kelly Seal.
Just one other, without wanting to beat this horse anymore, but a really important consideration, I think, is the police transport and how long we're going to tie up. I was a supervisor in Portland, and even just hauling people to Wilsonville, which is probably a quarter of the way that some of the Eastern Oregon police have to go to get lunch, it was really disruptive to have somebody, or especially if we had two or three people, have to transport. We have these big holes in our service, and over there it'd be where they have a lot less police and a whole lot more area to cover. That really needs to be considered in this discussion so that we don't end up removing all the law enforcement to transport something, give somebody a ride somewhere.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Representative Jensen?
Thank you. And I don't mean to ride this horse any further than we have to today. But when we talk about Eastern Oregon and Central Oregon, some observation that I'm wondering if they are considered in as you put this report forward. As an example, it is closer for a law enforcement officer from my town to transport a psychotic patient that is in need of a hold someplace to Portland than it is to Central Oregon, than it is to Bend. As the same thing would apply as far as Ontario would be, that's closer. So Eastern Oregon is not Eastern Oregon, I guess. And I think one of the things as we look at this issue, we need to look at the paths of communication, of transportation that we have. And where the best connections are for the populations that are out there. And I think that is sufficient to those guys. And I think we would also observe some of the same things when we note some of the same things when we look at Southern Oregon as an example. There are some populations that are a long ways away from the secure facilities that you're talking about, the substantial times that are going to be necessary to deal with that, and how much of a problem this is going to present to us is a significant question.
I think, Representative, that focuses on the issue of the location of the 16-bed secure residential facilities. That's going to be critical. I come from Bend, and I know it's easier for me to go to Eugene than it is to Ontario if a facility's out. So those logistics are going to be very important in your determination of the criteria relative to the development of those facilities. You're exactly right.
Precisely.
One of your comments are absolutely right on.
One of the things that we are anticipating is that with the improvement and the enhancement of the community-based mental health systems, that there will be fewer people having to have those long drives. That it's not going to eliminate, but it's that fewer people will actually have to go all that way. That they can get the majority of their health needs taken care of in local or nearby communities, and so that so that we can keep the state hospital system from becoming overlarge.
Karen? You mentioned that people today are traveling to hospital beds. I'm just curious if you could describe what that looks like. It might be a more appropriate question for Bob Nickel, who's in the audience, but I'm just curious about how that's happening today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Bob Nickel, and I'm the Assistant Director for the Department of Human Services, and I'm in charge of the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services. The question, Aaron, as I understand it, is what is the pattern of acute care transportation? In about 1990, the state embarked on a process that took all of the acute care, or almost all of the acute care services, out of the state hospital system. Prior to that time, we were sending everybody who needed a 10 to 12 day acute care hospitalization to the state hospital, usually in Salem and in Damish. We had lengths of stay at that time of 60 days for acute care. We have stays of 11 or 12 now. So we have a much more efficient system, and we're using now the community hospitals around the state. And I've sort of lost track of exactly how many acute care units we admit to, but it's probably 15 to 20. So that the transportation now, most of the time, probably well over 95% of the time, is to a fairly close by local acute care hospital and a general hospital. There are instances, because of the overcrowding of the state hospital, where we have a waiting list of 15 to 20 people waiting to get in for civil commitment beds for long-term care. We have clogs in the local system, and sometimes, even though it's not a large number, it concerns us all that people may have to be transported as far as from Portland, say, to Medford. So there are instances of that, and we track that.
Can I follow up, Mr. Chair?
Sure.
With respect to state hospital beds and the folks residing in them today, could you just talk a little bit about, with our current capacity, what some of the population needs are that are driving the current utilization of the state hospital beds?
I think most people on the western side of the mountains end up in the Salem campus or the Portland campus. We do have about 40 patients at any given time from the west side of the mountains at Eastern Oregon Psych Center, and I think that's part of what the KMD contractors were describing before, is that that's part of, though not the entire picture, of the maldistribution that we're dealing with.
Senator Gordley?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On a different topic, if I may, I'm looking at one of the other challenges for location of a Oregon State Hospital, community acceptance. And a question for the chair, a clarification. What is our forum? Where is the forum for identifying strategies for attaining community acceptance? A forum where we could talk about a public education campaign that helps the Oregon citizens better understand where we are with mental health, that recovery is possible. I'm trying to get a sense of where that piece of the work fits in. Does it fit in with one or both of the work groups, Dr. Goldberg, that you mentioned earlier, or is it a part of the charge of this committee to be thinking about those strategies that are focused in a laser-like way at getting at community acceptance? Because that's going to be a huge part of that is a huge challenge.
I think you've raised, Senator Gordley, a very important point. It seems to me that the place to have that discussion, and we'll certainly put it on the agenda, would be around the development of the entire community mental health system, because it's not simply about promoting acceptance of a hospital facility. It's also about how we gain acceptance and promote treatment within all of our communities at all of our facilities. Mm-hmm. I think it's an important point for throughout the system, not just around two or three facilities.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I agree with that.
Representative Jensen.
Just very quickly, as we're discussing these other hospitals and other beds, I'm positive that the consultants are aware of that, but there are no private beds in Eastern Oregon excepting that small area in Bend.
We are aware of that, and that is an issue, and it was brought up also in the report that part of the system of care does need to incorporate the acute care hospitals, as Bud Nickel just mentioned, and their role in the system of care, because to some degree they are a safety net, but they have challenges in and of themselves in their own worlds, so to speak, that make it increasingly difficult to manage those patients, that patient population. So you're absolutely right.
And just as a footnote on that, it's my understanding in the last week here that one of the hospitals that was being considered to try to put in some psych beds in Eastern Oregon ran into not in my backyard sort of problem.
That fits mm-hmm. with, I think, Senator Gordley's point and issues we all need to work together at. Please continue.
The recommendation and the recommendation that was selected is to then provide two state hospitals, one in the North Willamette Valley, one in the southern part of the state, west of the Cascades, and two residential treatment facilities east of the Cascades. The rationale...
Just very quickly, it's my understanding that the two residential treatment facilities will be inadequate for an emergency hold.
I don't think that would be the case, that they would be inadequate for an emergency hold. I think the other piece of this that that is part of the recommendation is the additional resources for the community-based settings that are not part of this discussion. But we are not suggesting that it is just two 16-bed facilities in Central and Eastern Oregon, but rather two to deal more with that state hospital population in addition to the community resources.
May I ask Bob Nickel to come forward again? And Bob, maybe this time just to stay as part of the panel, because I kind of considered that at some point it would become a larger discussion. So thanks for joining it.
Thank you, Dr. Goldberg. I kind of figured this might happen. Representative Jensen, that's the questions you're raising are all of the questions that, as Dr. Goldberg and I talked about the master plan report, it became clear to us that we needed to do a more focused look at what the needs of Central and Eastern Oregon are. Now, the intent will be in developing, I think we need at least two, you know, whether they're 12, 14, or 16-bed locked facilities, maybe more, we need to think through the issues of acute care capacity. Now, it's my understanding that one of the hospitals, Good Shepherd in Hermiston, is very seriously still considering putting hold rooms into their emergency department, something so that they can become, at least for that part of Eastern Oregon, the hospital of choice. Now, it may be that we can negotiate some of those kinds of things with other hospitals. We do have other hospitals.
You may want to talk to the city manager.
I will certainly do that, Representative Jensen. I am very aware that the sites that they had hoped to put a 16-bed facility are no longer much of an option in Hermiston, but I will check with with city manager on the other issues. Now, the fact is that a number of hospitals in Eastern Oregon are certified as hold hospitals, so that's not really a real radical change for a hospital to take a hold patient. But we'll, again, those are the kinds of issues that we really need to pay special attention to in Central and Eastern Oregon. The other piece of that is the rapid growth in the Bend area, and we want to make sure that we've fully taken into account what's happening there. Every time I go there, there are another three neighborhoods that have sprung up.
Thanks, Bob.
Actually, let me follow up on that question. My
sure.
name is Chair. So are we fairly convinced that then the actual needs in Eastern Oregon would be served by two community facilities of 16 beds or less, or are there, in fact, opportunities to or needs to add additional facilities? I mean, at this point, I'm not yet persuaded that this work is strong enough in Central and Eastern Oregon, and I suppose that's what we're going to work on with this this Eastern and Central Oregon work group. But I mean, I don't get the sense that two facilities are going to cover it.
Representative Dalton, I actually took note of Mr. Gross's point where he said at least two. And so I think that...
So what does that mean?
I think that we don't know exactly the precise need, and that's one of the issues that the group looking at Eastern Oregon will indeed take up. I don't know.
I think it's reasonable to say that the numbers and the projections just would not at this time, given the enhancement of community services and available services in Eastern and Central Oregon already, would not support more than 216 beds. Now, over the future, you get into the 10, 15, 20 years, possibly you'll want to expand on that system, but the current population demographics just do not support beyond that.
Certainly do not support an actual freestanding hospital, the type of which we are recommending on the western part of the Cascades. And I think that's really the pivotal piece, is that there is not enough of a population base in Eastern and Central Oregon, even combined, to support a freestanding hospital. So we need to be, as Bob has mentioned, as Dr. Goldberg has mentioned, we need to be a little bit more thoughtful, a little bit more creative on how we manage that population. We are saying from the numbers that we have, we think two secure facilities, in addition to the community-based investment that we have talked about independent of this conversation, that will likely manage that. But there may be, again, sounds like there's a fair amount of discussion that still needs to occur on just how that delivery system will come to play.
Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just going to state that we're one piece of several other pieces.
Right.
And probably one of the most very important piece is the community-based piece and how that actually comes to fruition, including the Not in My Neighborhood issue that Senator Gourley, but also what the involvement of the private hospitals may or may not be. So there's a lot of other pieces that are in addition to the site and how many facility pieces that go into play. So I think everybody's trying to figure out how we mesh into all those pieces.
Senator Gourley.
As I'm listening to the discussion, what's driven home for me, which is also captured in your full report, and I'm looking at page 5 of the report, Key Findings, State Hospital, you're asking us to take into consideration the historical utilization patterns. And those historical patterns say that... is it 93% of the population is coming from specific regions of the state. That's the historical pattern that we're
dealing
with.
That's based on the historical pattern as well as how the population is growing in the future, where in the state the population is growing.
That's a very important point. That's what's sticking with me.
Yes.
Okay.
Please continue.
Senator Gourley very ably made the first point on this slide very well, that was the basis for our recommendation, was that it places hospitals in locations that will provide the greatest amount of care for people close to their own home communities. It also, because the neuropsychiatric geriatric services are a very difficult population group, not only dealing with in terms of recovery, but also in terms of the staff, the professionals that focus on this particular kind. By placing them in one area, in just one of the hospitals, we then have gained a little bit better than trying to distribute them around the entire state. This recommendation should also maximize opportunities to retain the quality staff that we're searching for. It also provides the appropriate size areas for those areas of the state based on population distribution. And this is also where our primary educational facilities are located, so that we're looking for win-win situations, and those are the basis for the recommendations. The thing to remember too is that we're looking for something that's flexible. It is not static. The building will be only as static as it needs to be. Just briefly to summarize some of the items that we brought out in our report. Ideally, a mental hospital would not be more than one story tall. However, the reality is that distances get very great when you're dealing with 500, 600 bed facilities. So we are saying that it would be something that needs to be considered, but a two-story should be about as high as you go, simply because of movement within the facility by patients and staff. We've estimated that the 620-bed facility should have at least 100 acres, and probably more, because we do want to be able to have the flexibility for expansion. With the 360 facility, again, about 78 acres minimum, with space to grow. The 16-bed residential facilities are going to require somewhere in the range of 1 to 5 acres, depending on what kinds of recreational programs are associated with that or are nearby that could be utilized. The infrastructure, supporting infrastructure, roads, water, sanitary, gas, all of those kinds of things are going to be important considerations as you set up the criteria for selecting a site.
I get confused on this. The groups you're serving here, I think it was the Jim or maybe Leslie, early on you said there's three groups: civil, geriatric, and forensic. Is that right?
Right.
Okay, the geriatric one threw me, because I thought we had civil and forensic being guilty except for insanity. Mm-hmm. Yes, sorry. Okay. So could you help me with geriatric, and if it's geriatric, do they require different beds and or facilities than when you use the word civil? I know forensic is another whole world. So can you just, and also the last thing is, I was wondering when I read all the materials, the great work you've done, isn't just the 620-bed facility the forensic facility, or are you going to put forensic beds also in the 360-bed facility, as well as civil and geriatric beds in the 360? And could you help? I've never been able to figure out that, because that does relate maybe to not in my backyard and things. I don't know. There's these images the public sometimes has, and I know Senator Gordy talked about, we have an education project in front of us. It's huge. But I don't understand the different groups you're serving in terms of the facilities, including the 16 beds. Could you help me?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cordova, let me start off with just the legal distinctions. Most of the geropsychiatric patients are civilly committed. So in a sense, the civilly committed includes the more specialized services we provide in what we call our geropsychiatric units. There are a few people there in Gero who are technically voluntary, but that's because they're there under a guardianship. So just to lay out the legal framework in which people are there, really two groups, the civilly committed and the criminally committed, which we also call forensics. Now, I'll let others speak a little bit more to the clinical needs of those populations.
Bob, you know, it might be helpful, though, to just let everybody know that right now the numbers that are civil and forensic currently within the hospital, I think might be just very helpful to give some perspective on what we're dealing with.
Mr. Chair, Senator Courtney, I'm sorry. Right now we're funded for 434 forensic patients, and I believe last I checked we were at 438. Okay. We have 114 beds for geropsychiatric. That includes about a 30-bed unit for people who are primarily head injured. There are some other kinds of dementias that are in there. So that's with the 114 for Gero. We have 68 beds at the Portland campus for civilly committed. We have 60 beds in Eastern Oregon for civilly committed. And we have 65 beds in Salem for civilly committed. So that gives you a rundown. Now, at any given time, just to add one other distinction in here, there are forensic patients of two different types. One type is there, and this is about three-quarters of the population, are there because they've committed a crime. They've been, as Cecily said earlier, they've been found guilty except for insanity through a legal process that we have nothing to do with. The other group of patients in forensics, and there are usually about 100 of them, it goes up and down a little bit, they're what we call 370s. They're people who are there temporarily for an evaluation to determine whether they're able to aid and assist in their own defense and treat until they're able to go back to jail, usually local jails, and go to trial. At that point, some of them may be determined guilty except for insanity. Others may not be determined such. That's a legal court decision that we don't have any control over. And it's that 370 population that we're under a federal court order to take within 7 days of their determination by a court that they need to be there for this period of their time. So I'm not trying to confuse things, but I just want to be clear that there are really two types of forensic patients.
And to take that then and project forward to the campuses that we are recommending, we have in the 360-bed facility in the southern part of the state, that would be forensic and adult civil commitment patients. And both components of the forensic population, both the aid and assist and the guilty except for insanity population. So that would be a mix of forensic and adult treatment services. In the northern part of the state, the larger facility, what we are suggesting is that we have forensic, adult civil commitment or adult treatment services, as well as a centralized, what we're calling neuropsych, not just geropsych, but neuropsych, because of that head injury population, many of whom are not anywhere near 65 but have some of the same needs. We're suggesting we centralize that neuropsych unit, and it ultimately could get as many as 220 beds. Suggesting we centralize that because it is a very complex population to deal with. To answer your question, Senator Courtney, yes, they do require separate programming. They are a very oftentimes have considerable medical needs as well as their psychiatric needs. Many are medically fragile by that point, a very, very different, very challenging population to manage. So from that perspective, if we can centralize that, that kind of staff can be even harder to recruit and retain than the other staff. So we thought by centralizing that, we'd have a better chance of developing one very strong unit in the state.
In 16 beds, what kind of beds are those for, please?
Some of those could be forensic as well as adult treatment, yes.
Thank you.
Representative Jensen?
Just a minor follow-up tweak on this. The Gero, et cetera, is this the group or category that some of us would call the chronic?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, the term chronic really in some sense applies to any person who has a major mental disorder that's going to be with them for a long time. So I would probably not associate the term chronic just with the head injured or the demented population.
No, didn't.
I think it's better to think of these as people who really are, they're eligible, most of them, for nursing home care, but they simply can't be managed there because of their psychiatric or behavioral symptoms.
Well, could, can you distinguish then between chronic and acute?
Mr. Chair, Representative Jensen, acute is that period of time where a person is in the middle of a crisis, they're in the community, they need to go in, and the industry standard is really a length of stay in an acute care hospital unit for 10 to 12 days. Chronic or long-term or extended is whatever happens after the 10 to 12, or and sometimes it takes 30 days or so to help put a person back together in acute care hospitals. So I prefer myself to use the term extended care because the term chronic has really become, you know, something that sounds hopeless. And again, with the recovery resilience model, we're really trying to be careful about the language we attach to people. So.
Mr. Chair.
Yes. Senator Monsanto.
I think it's important to distinguish that when a mentally ill person goes into an acute phase, I mean, they are usually having a psychotic break or they're manic, or et cetera. And once they are then hospitalized and come under control, then you can consider them chronic in a sense, but they've stabilized and their behavior is back to normal, and that's when they can be put into the community setting. I don't know if that was what the question that Representative Jensen was referring to, but the acute is when they're actually in an episode, a manic episode or whatever type of acute behavioral one where you cannot control the behavior.
And if I could just add, our community hospitals do a great job. About 95% of the people who go in for the kind of care that Senator Monis-Anderson just described, a manic episode or an acute psychotic reaction, about 95% of them can be discharged back to the community. They don't have as much of a disruption in their life as if they're there for 2 or 3 months or years. And I think it's a much better model that the state of Oregon has gone to, and this is primarily in the civil commitment population.
But I think it would be helpful for us to have a breakdown of the forensics and the civil and maybe a little description of each one and how many are in the various facilities throughout the state.
Ms. Chair, Senator Monis-Anderson, Representative Dalto has asked for that last week, and I think it's a very good request because the system, frankly, has become much more decentralized and complex, if you will, and we're working on putting together such a map that will answer your question.
And just to, remind us that this is the appropriate discussion that we're having, and I think a lot of great questions. We'll be really focusing on site selection criteria. I think some of the other issues, particularly the two larger issues that have already arisen this morning, one, the particular needs of Eastern Oregon, and two, the system as a whole and the larger needs of designing the mental health system, those discussions will continue to go on in some other venues as we hopefully will have completed our work. That work will continue, but I think this is the appropriate discussion to have this morning in the background we all need.
The last slide, I think, is sort of our attempt to summarize the impact that the facility will have. It will not be a low-impact NAEP. When you get 600 people, 600 patients in any one facility, we're talking about a significantly large facility. There will be a lot of truck employment types of traffic. There will be visitors. There will be all sorts of traffic associated with this. So what part of your siting criteria needs to be aware that it's not going to be this quiet little residential thing sitting off to the side that will have no impact on the community. Will have a significant impact wherever it's located. But by the same token, we want it to be a good neighbor. And some of those ways are developing what happens at the perimeter, how the facilities, the recreational facilities are used. Perhaps they're even a component similar to what is occurring in the Salem campus, is where the park that is part of the campus is open to the neighbors. Things like that can do a lot to help address some of the NIMBY issues as well. People are there for a long time. Certainly staff, we hope, are there for a long time. So it's important that things such as near and distant views be addressed, that the amenities for staff and professionals be addressed in that same regard.
That's essentially the completion of our formal presentation to you, and we've had a good question and answer session. I think we have some more to do. Just to advise the committee, with the completion of this meeting, our involvement as a consultant and planning team to the state will be concluded. That will end our involvement in the master planning process. Of course, we're available at any time. If you need some additional comments or advice from us, we're happy to do that. I'd like to say in closing, right now, timing is a critical issue for you. Time is of the essence. The phase two report anticipates the opening of the new Oregon State Hospital as planned for the year 2011. If you wish to accomplish that goal, it'll be necessary for the site selection process to be completed by within the legislative session of 2007, which is essentially June of 2007. Absent that happening, it's likely that that opening might lead into later 2012, later year. So we want to raise your attention to that issue. I finalize, and just to close out, it's been a great privilege for us to be part of this process, and we very much appreciate the State Department of Human Services showing the confidence in us to engage us to participate in this process. It has been very educational for us, very enlightening, and I have to say to the committee that all the representatives of the state hospital system that we've worked with, administrative, management, staff, line staff, personnel, are very impressive folks. You should be proud of them. They are totally committed and responsible for the development of a very successful healthcare system that provides the highest possible treatment for the residents of the state of Oregon. And we've been delighted to be part of that and to involve ourselves with those folks. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any further questions, Representative Jensen?
Since you indicate this is your last or our last shot at any questions?
We know well it's never truly over.
We know where to find them.
You know where to find
them.
Yeah,
you're sure you got an address or a phone number or something? I'm a little concerned. I get and I don't know. You know, really enough about it to ask any specific sort of questions, but just to bring up a point that some of the things I'm hearing from hospitals is that the report is significantly different from any recommendations they might have made.
At the hospitals?
Hospitals. Big.
Yeah, from the acute care hospitals, I assume. Is that what you're referencing?
Yeah, major hospitals.
I'm not sure how to respond to that, Representative Jensen. I know that they are concerned. I believe that they would probably be concerned about support for their psychiatric hold rooms in the emergency rooms, as well as their ability to move the patients that do come into their facilities to another level of care. My guess would be those are two of the pressing issues. And I believe we have accommodated or we have addressed that by increasing the amount of community available resources. And actually within the report, we even do address the concern or the issue of more support for the psychiatric hold rooms as well.
Yes. You have addressed the community-based support in what manner, other than just to say that it's important?
In the report itself, we have made some preliminary projections as to how much and what types of community-based settings will be needed in the future to support this system of care.
Sure.
I could continue. This is said, since I first read the report, and it's been a little while ago now, and I've read it a couple of times since then, one of the things that has concerned me and will concern me as we proceed with the discussions on this is that there are a number of assumptions made in the report. Assumptions that, and I'm not quarreling with those assumptions. I'm not quarreling with the efficacy of them if they are if they're achieved. The thing that I'm concerned about is that these are assumptions that, as one legislator, I'm not really comfortable with them falling into place somewhere down the line. I'm old enough to remember when we went through, you know, some of the deinstitutionalization phenomenon of the 60s and 70s and with community-based programs and so forth, and we took all of the people out of the old state hospitals on the basis that we were going to provide the services in the community. Now, the services in the community have often wound up being a cot underneath of I-5 or I-84, you know, sort of thing, or they wound up with one of the other issues that I brought up a few minutes ago, with the mentally ill person being, instead of handled in a mental illness capacity, handled and incarcerated in prison. So I have to be nervous, Mr. Chair, about the idea of the assumptions, and you'll forgive me, but that will probably continue to be something of a pony I'll be riding.
I don't think there's any need to ask for forgiveness. I think you've raised an important issue, and I think certainly the issue of the acute care hospitals as part of a larger community mental health care system is something that we certainly need to consider. We'll hear from some of those individuals in some testimony that's following, and I think have some additional opportunity to discuss that with them, as well as opportunities for those discussions to take place in some of these other groups, because indeed it's a vitally important piece of the system that we've put together, and I think you're legitimately and appropriately concerned.
And Mr. Chair, I do recognize that it is the legislature and the executive department that since 1960 has been consistently dropping the ball and providing those other services.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting, if I can follow up on that, because there is an analogy in the state already relative to those concerns, and it relates to the justice system, where the state legislated that counties would now accept inmates for short, low-risk inmates for up to a year, I believe. And the presumption was that the counties would be supported in that financially from the state. And I don't believe in many cases that has occurred. So you have at the county level some concern when one starts talking about how we're going to infuse money potentially into a support system in order to allow this to happen. And it was an interesting part of our discussions that some history in an analogous way relates to just the very issues you raised. Is clearly of the stage two or phase two report that what we are recommending is predicated on the need to support those community-based systems. If that doesn't happen, there will be some difficulty in realizing the success of the system.
President Jensen.
I'm sorry, but I will change directions right now and go to another point. I'm concerned about this being close to the community issue. And you know, forgive me if I'm just paraphrasing some of the language here, but the idea that it is beneficial to be if the patients are available to the positive influences of family and some others. Therefore, the reason and the need to be close to the community. I would make the first observation that if they're close to the positive influences, they're also close to the negative influences. And that in at least some regards, those negative influences have some pretty significant negative effect on treatment or recovery. And when we deal with then the dual diagnosis individuals, we heard some expert testimony in one of the committees or task forces a few weeks ago here that if you're going to break the drug addiction problem, you've got to get them out of the community. You've got to get them removed from that. As long as they're going to be put right back into that community, they're destined. The success rate for healing or curing or whatever the terminology, drug addiction, approaches zero. The success rate, if you remove them from the community of the drug addicts and paraphernalia, et cetera, goes up to what I think something like 60%. And I don't want to be held accountable for those figures. That's just kind of quick off the top. And so I'm curious if there's if in your thinking there's been this phenomenon was ever a part of your thinking about how we deal with it, and if it has been part of it, I'd like to have you help me a little bit in understanding it.
I'd like to address part of it to begin with, especially if you don't mind. We did discuss these kinds of issues. We're aware that particularly those with dual diagnosis, that component, the alcohol, the drug component, is a very negative and strongly negative component where they are from. On the mental health side of things, those who are severely and persistently affected with this, family is often the only sort of retreat that they have. And when they are in a facility, family are the ones that those are the positive reinforcements that you give. And so in sort of weighing those two, we felt that it was more important, and certainly I felt that it was more important, that the patient be close to family. And we deal with the others through education and counseling, but that the family needs to be an active part of the treatment program.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. I think listening to this discussion, I think it's important that we recognize that one of the opportunities we have is to build on what we have, what's being developed now. And I'm speaking specifically to community placement development. The information that I've seen from the Department of Human Services, Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services, tells us that in partnership with local governments, there has been developed more than 260 new community-based placements for adults with severe and persistent mental illness. What we have going on now is a trend. This is work that we have the opportunity to build on to service a need that exists right now. There are people waiting for these to utilize these placements. In addition to what I've said, the work that's going forward also follows a recommendation that comes out of this phase two report that there is a need for more community placements. And what the department is trying to do is what they're doing now is about meeting or exceeding what is required. I hope that's clear. And I also realize that I'm raising a discussion that belongs in a work group that is going to carry forward. this good work. But I just think it's really important that we understand that we're building on what we have. What we have isn't enough to meet the demand that exists right now. And on top of that, we have a Department of Justice investigation giving us some, putting our feet to the fire to move forward. That's how I'm framing the opportunity.
To follow up again on an analogy in response to Representative Jensen to your question, there's always the loyal opposition in terms of those kinds of opinions. There's a very successful program in the justice community that's based on the fact you should not, in fact, remove folks from the community in which these negative environments occur, but rather work on those very negative environments in addition to working with either the inmate or the patient, in the case of the Oregon State Hospital, working in combination with both to change the environment such that the treatment modality can be successful. And there's a program that's been used in Massachusetts, and it's been permeated around a number of other states that is based solely on that philosophy and has been extremely successful. So these kinds of community-based programs aren't totally patient-focused. They should be focusing on those aspects of the community that may contribute also to the kinds of difficulties that you're describing, working within the family group in order to change those conditions. Otherwise, they're going to prevail forever, and you're never going to solve the problem. So there's a fairly cogent argument that can be made is you're avoiding an issue rather than dealing with an issue that may contribute to these kinds of problems.
And if I can add just one more, because I do think your question is a very valid one as you start talking about site selection. No question that that's going to come into play. When we talk about the recovery model of care, as I mentioned before, part of that is empowering that individual to manage their own mental illness. And if we deny the fact or we don't address the fact that they are indeed a substance abuser or something else, if we don't help them deal with that part of their illness, then we are probably doing a disservice to that individual. And so while we don't want to put them back into that small community, we want to keep them, if they are from Salem, we'd like to keep them in Salem or near Salem. If they are from Cannon Beach, we'd like to keep them as near to that community as we can. Not necessarily their substance abusing community, but that greater community that they that they have grown up in or that they live in. So perhaps the definition of community may be a little different.
Mm-hmm. Senator Courtney, then Senator Winters, and Senator Mona Sanderson.
Well, I don't want to cut off this discussion, but since the KMDs informed us within a few moments after this discussion, they're going to say goodbye, although it's not a Yogi Berra goodbye. I'm curious, to begin with criteria, my staff has done something here. I don't know where they got this from, but it's very good stuff. They just looked at the correction siting. For example, their criteria are a proposed site must not be located in a 100-year floodplain. Proposed site must not be in a designated tsunami inundation zone. A proposed site must have infrastructure available either on site or such that can be provided and maintained cost effectively. Mr. Chair, is that the 1 to 2 o'clock hour when DAS gets involved? Because if they're going to leave, there's all these other criteria that I'm looking for in terms of these, but if it's going to catch up with this, then goodbye, although it's not Yogi. But I just don't want to listen.
You can, I think, safely say goodbye. Those are the criteria that the folks from DAS will be discussing with.
Okay, then I could just ask one more, and I'll be still and let this dynamic discussion take place that's continuing. Do we need a criteria, in your opinion? And maybe it's here, because you've written two remarkable documents, and then you've testified, that reflected this multi-purpose discussion we had about a half an hour, 45 minutes ago. That is, these facilities are going to be multi-purpose, although you may not commingle within the institute. Because I was lost on that, or do we not need one? Just to remind us that the 16, the 360, the 620 is not just going to be all civil or all one is going to be all. Do we need any criteria maybe added, or as you're so certified smart, no, Peter, if you read between the lines here, or more importantly, Peter, if you just read, it is on page such and such, and what about that? Do you understand what I'm saying?
I'm not exactly sure.
That's what I was worried about. maybe we don't need a criteria. Since we're doing criteria, do we need a criteria that reminds us that these facilities are multi-purpose in nature. They are not just a single population. You've identified three populations. Or have you done that already in your great written work and verbal work, written work?
I think it's intrinsic to what we've stated. Those are the facilities we were recommending. Those are the populations to be within the facilities. To the extent that site selection is affected by that, it's really... We already have said you need to place a 360-bed facility somewhere in the southern Willamette Valley. And the reason for that is because of the nature of the population.
I understand that. I have no qual... Excuse me, Mr. Chair. I'm not quarreling with you. I'm not arguing with you. But somewhere got by me, and maybe I'm the only one, that 320, I know where you want to put it, in the 620s, I know that. That is geographically careful what we do here, if we're aware where it's going to go. But I just... It missed me, went right by me, in my very... mundane layperson's way, that you were going to put all the groups in each one of them, not just a single one.
That is correct.
Well, I know it's correct now that I... Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chair, let's just go on. Let this other thing that continues going on
and
here. Because
I think that our criteria will be that you would want each of those sites to be able to address the unique needs of each of those specific populations. And that, I think, will be some of the discussion that we'll have in the next couple of meetings.
Clandestine sensitive issues in the recommendation, and we recognize this, is the fact that we are recommending that you look at placing 600 plus bed facility in the North Willamette Valley. That does not acknowledge the existence of this facility here in Salem right now. So there is a reason, and there is a certain amount of argument can be made that you already have an existing site here. That is, you don't deal with the neighborhood issues, you're already a good neighbor, you don't deal with community acceptance, it's big enough to handle facility. You know, why wouldn't we recommend that site? And to a certain extent, specifically, it is not consistent with the needs of the population. It is a viable site. That's not to say it's not workable. But if we were asked to provide you with an opinion on what the optimal siting on a regional basis would be for these facilities. So inherent in the population we're proposing for the large facility is a consideration that the siting should be associated with where the greatest need will be, and that is north of Salem. So all those issues relative to population and the facility size and what it is have been taken into regional consideration in terms of siting proposition.
And indeed, that's going to be the task ahead of us, is to develop those criteria and then find the appropriate sites based on those criteria.
And the whole issue of infrastructure, which you're going to address, surely, I mean, that's an important one, especially for those that are going to be placed out in eastern Oregon, those facilities, because you do not want to place them 2 miles from the most available infrastructure. You're going to pay twice as much for the facility and getting the basic needs of utility systems to those facilities. So, yeah, all right.
Senator Winters and Senator Mona Sanderson.
Looking at the task, and it is a challenge ahead. I mean, even if you come up with good siting criteria, because the other challenge is when we talk about community acceptance and some of those other criteria involved in it. You just mentioned one of where you currently have a facility that the community has embraced, and some of those issues. In your work, do you have a state that has accomplished these challenges?
Yeah. They overcome that one to me.
I just recently returned from Kansas, and I'm my state of birth, and was very horrified at what's happened in Kansas with their state hospital, because the legislature chose to actually close. And I asked the question, well, what's happened to the population? Thirds on the street, one third's in jail, and they may have provided housing for, maybe others. So the community structure, as we talk about today, is not in place.
Right.
So just to throw that out, so I want to know which state has become enlightened and is advanced.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Winters, I think that is a very valid question, and certainly you're not the first to have asked that. I think the best response to that, in all honesty, is nobody is out there doing it great. There are pieces components of what other states are doing that we may be able to draw on. But I cannot and would not point to one state and say they have this down. I think you can look at the state of Ohio. They have a decentralized approach to the state hospitalization. There are some components of that that I think we can take in and perhaps address, because like Oregon, they're a bigger state in terms of population, but like Oregon, they have a rural and an urban community that they need to deal with. So they've done some things that perhaps we look at when we start addressing the needs of Central and Eastern Oregon. There are some states in the Northeast that have done a good job of decentralizing the civil commitment population, but they don't deal with the forensic population the way we do. So there is no one state out there that does it great.
Although there's going to be a couple of other committees, I think it's critical that we learn from the past. You know, and I share Representative Jensen's concern about when you do deinstitutionalization, that you're certain that the infrastructure in the communities are in place.
You're absolutely right. I think I'm sad to say that I have shared the experiences of my home state, which is North Carolina, with the folks on the task force here, and they have closed down a number of state hospital beds. And at the time they did it, the intent was to support community-based services. The structure was not, the system was not put into place to support those community-based services, and they are in a fair amount of chaos right now. And so, like I said, I'm not proud of the fact that that is my home state, but that is what is going on. They are a very good example of why we are emphasizing and have emphasized from the get-go this has to be a system solution. On the other hand, we can't, as Jim mentioned, we can't wait to resolve all the issues before we start dealing with the state hospital beds. We have to start somewhere.
Senator, I'd like to hopefully contribute to a little optimism about your home state of Kansas. It happens we did a statewide master plan for the state of Kansas. You're exactly right. They closed everything down but Larned State Hospital. Everyone started cycling through the justice system. It became a revolving door. They hand them back to the hospital. They hand them back to the justice system. They have built at Larned State Hospital a new state security hospital, which was one of the options considered in our original phase one. So they are, to some degree, addressing those issues.
And then they lost their major trainer, Menninger. Mm-hmm. They went to, I understand, to Texas?
Right. Yes. I think that's right.
Because I noticed you had a peer mentoring in component in here, which talks about training others. I mean, I'm just looking at you know, an overall mm-hmm. system, and I was, in fact, Senator Corton called me while I was there, and I was horrified.
Last question, then we're going to take a break. Senator Mona
okay.
Sanderson.
When you have a mental illness, it's so individual, and especially if it's dual diagnosis, but that's a whole set of another problems. But there are many positive influences. That's why I so agree with what you have come up with, because when you have a professional who has a psychotic break, has a mental illness, has a psychotic break, and then they get back on medication, they need a transition period of time, yet the family and the children, and they need to be able to not be, you know, 2 hours away, because then they don't have that family support. So I just feel that it's so important. We have mental ill people who do not want to take, they have an aversion to taking their medication. We get them into the system, they get good support, and then that family needs to be brought in. And it's very, very difficult when they're located so far away and you don't have the family right there to help them through this transition process.
Well, I want to thank our panel. Thank you very much for the information, and thanks to the committee for the great discussion. What we're going to do now is take a 10-minute break, because it's been a great discussion. I think everyone could use 10 minutes. Then we will reconvene at 10:35, and we'll have an opportunity to continue this discussion, albeit in a different vein, with some public testimony, where indeed many of the issues that have come up this morning, I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to pursue further, as we have certainly individuals from communities, staff at our hospital, local community hospitals, as well as consumers who would like to provide some public testimony. So with that, let's take a break and reconvene at 10:35. Thank you. Okay, I'm going to ask us to come back into session.
It's going to mess up your goose.
No, they indicated that it was a report call.
We have now some time set aside for public testimony, and there are 10 individuals that have signed up. I want to assure everybody that everybody will have an opportunity to provide testimony. What I would ask is, given the time that we have, is that we try and keep both prepared remarks that individuals may have, as well as an opportunity for questions, to about 10 minutes per individual. And I think if we do that, we should be close to getting done a little after noon. And if that's not sufficient, we'll come back after lunch and continue with public testimony, probably towards the end of the afternoon. So with that, what I'd like to do is there are a couple of individuals that have come some distance. So can we start with Robin Henderson? And is Michael? Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Goldberg. For the record, I'm Dr. Robin Henderson, Director of Behavioral Health Services at St. Charles Medical Center in Bend. And you're correct, I did come over from Bend just this morning to be here. I am representing the Oregon Psychiatric Inpatient Committee, which is comprised of representatives from the state's acute care hospitals that have psychiatric units. We're each part of larger nonprofit hospitals and healthcare systems. We're a volunteer committee of potential competitors that have come together because of the serious mutual concerns we have about the mental health delivery system in Oregon. Even though our primary focus is on acute inpatient care issues, our role in system of care requires that we interface with hospitals, the State Office of Mental Health Services, county mental health programs, law enforcement, and the county judicial processes. As such, we're integrally invested in every aspect of the primary components of the mental health system of care in Oregon. Changes to any of these components can have a significant impact on our ability to provide quality, cost-effective care. Our programs manage 370 acute psychiatric beds here in Oregon, housed in 16 not-for-profit hospitals. I believe Kevin Earls from the Hospital Association is passing out some attachments and our written testimony, which is different than the oral testimony you'll be hearing here this morning. We didn't want to bore you with our dry written testimony, but we wanted you to have the information. One of the handouts you'll be seeing is a map that looks like this. And this map, I think that's in a separate attachment that, Patty, you don't have there yet. This map gives you an idea of where the acute psychiatric adult beds, and we're strictly talking about the adult continuum, are located in this state. And as you can see, the bulk of them are loaded fairly much in Western Oregon. And it also breaks out for you then, using 2005 population data, the demographics of beds per 100,000 residents. So I think you find this to be a very helpful graphic in your discussions about siting. There's also broken out by region so you can see where these facilities are and which hospitals have them. That's in attachment number 2. It's kind of your more traditional Excel spreadsheet that tells you where the beds are and those types of things by county and by hospital. We provide services to all age groups, public, private, voluntary, and involuntary. Yeah, we heard this morning, it was very helpful to be here and hear the testimony this morning, and the characteristic of us as a safety net for the state hospital system is somewhat simplistic. We are the first line of inpatient treatment and are the gatekeepers for the civilly committed population. For, you know, people come to us, they're transferred, they're admitted. We're the people who come in, you come and you see us first before you get to the state hospital. Our emergency rooms are that first line of defense, and we see tens of thousands of mentally ill consumers each year. Some of them we admit, some of them we triage, some of them we don't admit or aren't able to provide care for within the community system of care because those systems just don't exist. For many of us, as acute care hospitals, the highest ranking DRG, which is the Medicare cost basis upon which we get paid, in our ERs, are psychiatric diagnoses. People coming in with primary, secondary, and tertiary psychiatric diagnoses as part of what presents to an emergency room. That is a huge, huge change for most hospitals. A good example, last year at St. Charles Medical Center Bend, we treated over 32,000 people in our ER last year. And of all their diagnoses, the most commonly occurring one were the psychiatric DRGs. That was a stunning statistic.
Do you know what percentage of the 32,000 were?
Off the top of my head, I can't remember, but I could get that statistic for you.
Great.
We're here to say we agree with the need for a new state hospital system. We support that. And it's not our desire to interfere with that process or that momentum toward making this a reality. But we wanted the opportunity to share some of the concerns that we have with the current plan that you're going to be deliberating on today. And I'm going to turn the microphone over now to Mike May.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Dr. Michael May, psychiatrist. I'm vice president and medical director of mental health services at Samaritan Mental Health, Samaritan Health Services in Corvallis, Oregon. I have been in Corvallis since 91. I opened the acute care unit there, which was one of the regional units that got opened that resulted from the 1988 Neil Goldschmidt report on need for acute care services and the regionalization process, and I've been manager and director of that unit since that time. So I've been around for a lot of the changes that have taken place. I've had the opportunity to review the master plan. I've gone through it several times, and part of what I want to address today are significant concerns that those of us on OPIC have with the lack of information about the acute care inpatient services in the state and projections going forward. So with your indulgence, I'll read some of the quotes from the report itself. The current master plan design appears to make assumptions about the inpatient acute care system, but is not clear what those assumptions are. In Appendix F of the master plan, titled Project Assumptions, makes absolutely no reference to acute care inpatient units. The default assumption and presumed expectation must be that the not-for-profit hospitals will continue to provide whatever acute care services are necessary. If this is the assumption, it's a dangerous one. The references that are made about the acute care inpatient units in the master plan document are few. On page 2 of the executive summary, it identifies the need to, quote, improve the movement of persons through the system by adequate state funding of enhancements to acute care and community-based programs, end quote. On page 10 of the report, it states, quote, without the enhanced community programming, demand for Oregon State Hospital beds will substantially exceed projections of size and cost. There are two components of the community-based programs that affect Oregon State Hospital utilization: community-based residential programs and critical, quote, front-end, unquote, services. That is to say, the front door, which are the acute care units we are representing today, and the back door, which are the residential facilities, many of which are well outlined in the report in terms of cost, location, size, utilization, that sort of thing. In the section titled Continuum of Care, acute care hospitals are referenced as providing, quote, critical function in the continuum, end quote. And on page 21, the report states, quote, hospitals are experiencing increased financial struggles, and psychiatric units in particular are under greater scrutiny as hospitals are faced with difficult decisions regarding which services to keep and which to exit. The difficult financial situation of hospital psychiatric units has resulted in reductions in beds on some of those units and the closure of one psychiatric hospital. Acute care capacity in Oregon has been further reduced with the closure of two other hospitals related to poor clinical performance and overall hospital financial issues. This trend threatens a critical safety net and program setting for those with mental illness, end quote. We assert that this identifies but significantly understates the problem. There have been, in fact, 8 unit closures and bed reductions at 6 of the currently operating facilities. Acute care psychiatric beds are, in fact, a drain on hospital resources because they consistently lose money. Even though mission-driven, many not-for-profit hospitals are not going to be able or willing to cover these services with other revenue-producing services. On page 3 of the report's introduction, it states that the consultant's team objective was to, quote, review and evaluate inpatient and outpatient services throughout the state of Oregon and recommend appropriate changes and enhancements to the system, end quote. In 2005, there were over 6,500 admissions to the acute care psychiatric units in the state, compared with less than 1,000 to Oregon State hospitals. It is apparent that in addition to the state beds in the Oregon State Hospital system, many patients are served in the acute care beds. The adequacy, location, and viability of these beds was not attended to in the Phase 2 report, and so falls short of the stated objective. In the census, projections in the report go all the way out to 2030. They do not include anything about data on acute care bed needs now or into the future. And so it follows that in the operating and development cost section of the report on page 13, there is no mention of the potential costs associated with the acute care units. There currently are and will continue to be significant costs associated with provision of acute inpatient services. OPIC is concerned that the report does not address these costs and that this committee and others will be broadsided in the future when these costs become apparent or when the acute care infrastructure deteriorates to such a point that the proposed plan is inadequate to meet the need. It is imperative that the adoption of the Phase 2 design factor in and justify all the costs to the proposed new system of care, including the acute inpatient care component. Robin will talk a little bit more about a subject that came up quite a bit this morning, actually, the Eastern Oregon issues.
You know, I'm from Central and Eastern Oregon, as you heard. I'm the St. Charles Medical Center Bend, and in my discussions with the hospitals that I serve and work with in that community, I'm only familiar with a few hours of conversations that occurred with hospitals in our area in the development of the report. I am the only facility east of the Cascades. My unit that operates there at St. Charles Medical Center that some of you have been to and toured opened 18 months ago. And 97% of the people that we have seen have come from Central and Eastern Oregon. I can tell you that that demographic was not in my projections when I built that. I wasn't able to pull out and say, gee, I'm going to see this many people, because a lot of these people just didn't get served. A lot of these people didn't come to Western Oregon. They went to their own hospital emergency rooms, went back home, and didn't get served. So we weren't able to really capture that population well, and that gives me concern about the demographic projections you have for that area. We serve over half the landmass of the state, but only about 12% of the population, and that makes for a variety of unique challenges. And there are senators and representatives on this community, on this committee, who are very familiar with those challenges, more so than I, actually. I am intimately familiar with the business model needed to be successful in Central and Eastern Oregon in an environment with many unique challenges. There are challenges to human resources, there are financial challenges, there are payer mix challenges, and there are also challenges with the acute hospital resources that exist that are needed to support any type of facility you want to site over there. There are acute care hospitals interested in partnering with the state to provide these services and build facilities that serve the needs of their communities. But these are small, mission-driven hospitals that don't have mental health resources on their staffs. They are 100% reliant upon us as the expert in that area. Even when you get to the outer ring, we see many patients from Union and Umatilla counties, Sherman, Morrow, Wheeler, all the way to the eastern rim. And we are the only facility that has psychiatrists on staff who can see people when they come into our facility. As you see on the map, some of the services provided east of the Cascades are in individual hold rooms, and I think there's one other hold room out here that I did not note. And I want to encourage you that as the primary hospital that supports those individual hold rooms, and I've heard that term used a lot this morning, those are not acute care services. These are often little rooms in the middle of a med-surg ward staffed by people who are scared of the mentally ill. When I first arrived in Bend a few years ago, and I've only been there for 5 years, I came from the Portland market, and I was horrified to see how hospitals, including my own, utilize those old rooms. those were not the supportive services that you went into for a few hours. There were people who were in there for 3 to 5 days, locked in a single room, not in a milieu environment, not getting treatment, not getting therapy, sometimes not even being seen by a licensed mental health professional. That horrified me. And my first task, even though I was brought to Central Oregon to build this facility, really became to deal with those hold rooms that were constructed in these little hospitals. And I provide primary support to many of them to help them decide how they can best utilize them, how we can get folks out of them. The calls my staff take in the middle of the night to say to the hospital up in Madras, yeah, I know you've got somebody in there and we don't want you to have to keep them for a long period of time, but I don't have any beds either. It's very scary that those little rooms are considered part of the system in some fashions, and I really think we need to have very serious discussions with those of us who provide services in that area to talk about the best utilization of that resource. I get concerned about the fiscal viability of certain levels of care. I know what this market is like. I know that even for my facility, being the only facility east of the Cascades, it's difficult to maintain a viable census. And it takes 3 to 5 years to really develop a viable census so that you can say you're a solid fiscally running program. Without the gracious support of St. Charles Medical Center Bend, we would not be operational at this point because we are still operating at a loss. There are days where we'll run for weeks at four patients, or not weeks, days at four patients. And then all of a sudden we'll be at 13 the next day. That kind of volatility comes from a new program and a new resource in a community that's still trying to find its footing. The bottom line is we're concerned that the lack of population won't justify the breadth of opportunities available to consumers west of the Cascades. Because we can't support independent systems for each of the levels of care, we may be underserved in those respects. And I would encourage you to look at the utilization of variances and multipurpose facilities when you're considering working with Central and Eastern Oregon. There are a lot of opportunities for us to look at utilizing facilities with the same staff for multiple purposes that would further enhance the breadth of opportunities available to Central and Eastern Oregon. We want to get creative with all of you. We want to talk about how we can have those same opportunities and not have to rely on Western Oregon for that. In closing, as chair of the Oregon Psychiatric Inpatient Committee, I'm representing my hospitals and saying we're committed to supporting OMHAS in the development of a new state hospital. That's very clear. But we ask you today, are we engaging in reverse engineering in the redesign of the state hospital? Is this truly a new system of care or simply the funding of a sorely needed replacement to our existing state hospital? We've heard references to the 1988 governor's report that Governor Goldschmidt had, and you'll see references to the President's New Freedom Commission in our written testimony, and also references to Governor Kulongoski's mental health task force as well, that talk about whether or not, you know, we're really looking at a new system of care. This is not a new idea. In 1988, they recommended we needed a new system of care. OPIC believes the current facility in Salem must be replaced, and we're supportive of plans calling for a new facility. However, the master plan is not complete without an adequate evaluation of the critical and necessary component of acute inpatient psychiatric services provided by the members of OPIC. We need a master plan that truly engineers a new system of care, designed and built, with the totality of that system of care as the focus. We call upon lawmakers to clearly communicate this to the advisory committee, the steering committee, and the consultant team for the master plan, and drive a new system of care that includes all critical components of the system, is evidence-based, and serves all Oregonians as close to their home communities as is possible. Thank you for your attention, and we'd be happy to answer questions.
Thank you very much for your testimony, for your remarks, and indeed, the acute care hospital system plays an important piece of the larger mental health care system, and I think that as we continue on, the charge of this committee is limited to the site selection criteria. I think the opportunities with the group that's looking at the larger issues surrounding the mental health care system, as well as the unique needs, the group that's looking at the unique needs of Eastern Oregon, will greatly benefit from the input that you can provide, and we'll be certain that that happens. So thanks. Senator Mona Sanderson.
Just a comment. I think it's critical that the OMHAS and the hospitals work together to come to resolution. I think what bothered me in your testimony you said that staff is afraid of the mentally ill person, and yes, when they become violent, etc. But I think Senator Gordley referenced that it's part of the educational process in understanding the mentally ill and being able to handle it. And I feel strongly that the acute care hospitals have to have staff that are able to deal with those, and how we can, OMAS, and we can work together to make sure that they will be able to take care of our mentally ill.
Questions? Senator Dalton.
Well, more of an observation, Mr. Chair. I said this morning that I wasn't persuaded that that the report adequately reflected the reality of Eastern and Central Oregon, and I hear two different tracks here. This morning I heard that Eastern Oregon and Central Oregon had a community infrastructure that was capable of dealing with problems before they became really acute, and now I hear that from Dr. May that we have something of a potential acute care bed crisis, and I just I'm glad this information is coming out. I'm glad folks came over from those rural communities to explain to us what the needs are. But the question for the panel, I mean, you've heard the testimony this morning. Certainly has raised questions for me. I mean, do you feel that way?
Mr. Chair.
So obviously they're getting to an acute bed need, so they're not being treated before they decompensate.
In our written testimony, I think we offer some additional detail, but let me just say we've been in an acute care bed crisis for at least 5 years, maybe longer, where there are days where there is no acute care bed for somebody who is in acute need, to the point that some of the hospitals in the Portland area have had to close down their emergency rooms to all patients, not just psychiatric patients, because they had so many psychiatric patients waiting for a bed that they had no more beds. They had to go on divert. This has been going on for a long time. At my hospital down in Corvallis, I routinely have patients from out of our area on our unit because other units in the Portland area or other parts of the state are full. We are literally shipping people up and down the I-5 corridor based on who gets discharged and who needs to get in next. And the entire system that was designed is not designed for that kind of transporting patients. The cost, the difficulty clinically with doing that to patients is something that we've been trying to address for a long time, but it is still there. So I think our concerns really going into a new system of care, which includes limited state hospital beds, is where is the projections for the acute care bed need? I mean, we don't have enough now, apparently, at least based on the current system design. If we didn't have wait lists to go to the state hospital, would there be enough acute care beds? I don't have an answer for that. Somebody needs to look at that. But certainly going forward, when you're looking out to 2030, even 10 years from now, population in Oregon's growing, how are you going to decide what acute care beds are needed? And as I mentioned in my oral testimony, I think it's very dangerous to assume that acute care hospitals, that the regional hospitals are going to simply flex up and flex down to serve a population that in part isn't even from their own area, but where they're losing money constantly. So I think these are serious concerns that need to be factored in and need to be looked into if you're going to adopt a plan. And I recognize, Mr. Chair, that this is a committee looking at site. But as part of that site, you're looking at the number of beds that you're going to have, too. And if you don't look at all of the inpatient beds, because if the acute care system closes down, those patients have to go somewhere. They're either going to go to jail or they're going to be shipped to the state hospital because somebody has to take them. You can't just put them out back out on the street. So this is a very important piece that needs to be looked at.
Mr. Chair, if I could have a comment based on those comments. You know, I've read the steering committee report several times. I was on the steering committee, and I've had no fewer than 8 copies of the report delivered to my office. At various times, so I'm quite familiar with the report. Mr. Chair, I understand the scope of this or the charge of this committee is the site selection criteria process. I'm sure that we will accomplish our charge. But I can tell you from my personal opinion, my personal reflections, if we don't have discussions about these sorts of issues and iron out these issues prior to getting to the Legislative Assembly next session, once we've finished with this criteria process, we're going to have a real challenge passing some kind of bill with the time constraints or the considerations for timing that we need to have. I would say that I would like to stake out my feeling very clearly at this point that option number two is probably the best option among the three, but I don't think that we should be married to option two as it's presented. I think that option two could stand to be amended somewhat and have some kind of hybrid version of option two, which would reflect the additional needs for either acute or non-acute, subacute treatment in other parts of the state that aren't reflected on this. I know that 620 beds in Salem or 360 beds somewhere outside of Salem are the right numbers. I don't know. I mean, that's for the consultants to decide. But, you know, if we shave, a couple dozen beds off a 360 number or something like that to build capacity in other parts of the state, I can tell you my feeling based on conversations with my colleagues in my chamber, we're not going to be able to move something forward that it doesn't have these questions answered. And why would we build a new hospital without trying to move closer to the system that we need to have? I mean, this is the criteria selection site criteria committee. It isn't the let's build a master plan for a new mental health committee, but. I think it would be a missed opportunity if we don't take advantage of this opportunity that we have now. So, thank you. And I'll try to keep quiet.
Senator Gordley and then Senator Mona Sanderson.
Thank you. A question to the chair, given the remarks of the good representative Dalto. You referenced the two work groups that will be very focused in their efforts. Is it your intent that those two work groups would complete their work prior to the beginning of the next session? The work group that's looking at the big picture service delivery and the second group looking at Eastern?
Yes, for exactly, I think the reasons that we've had as part of our discussion this morning, that these are important questions that need to be factored in and addressed as we move forward. So indeed, I would look at those groups finishing their work before the first of the year.
Okay. I think it's important to make that piece very clear that this is a comprehensive effort. It's on three different tracks. I mean, I'm counting the track that we're looking at here, which is focused on criteria, but then the other two work groups are a part of this overall effort. Does that help Representative Dalto?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Senator, very much.
Okay.
Senator Winters.
It would be helpful, Mr. Chair, if you had a timetable outline for those two work groups. Mm-hmm. And then I think it then and when everything begins to come together, because what's occurring is that this body is actually looking at all three of the aspects rather than the one. But I do have a question for one of the panel, if I may, and that is because, Robin, you mentioned, and I'd just like you to elaborate a little bit, reverse engineering and what you meant by reverse engineering.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator Winters and Chair Goldberg. What I mean by reverse engineering is we're looking at the site as the goal here, and then we're building the infrastructure behind it. And that, in and of itself, as we've seen in, I think it was referenced recently in the Guantanamo Bay fiascos that we're seeing, is not the way to go. We know, evidence-based shows us, that the big box approach is not the most preferred by consumers, and it's not evidence-based as being the best. But this is what we're doing. We're building a system of care behind a decision already, and that, in essence, is reverse engineering. So thank you for the opportunity to clarify.
Although I would point out, I think, in fairness to the presentation this morning, that they started out with just the opposite assumption, saying that they were actually, this report was not based on starting with sites, but based on some assumptions about building a system. And it's really incumbent upon all of us, and I think the work of the work groups that we've talked about in terms of developing that community-based system to be able to support the facilities. So I think that's where the challenge is.
Yeah, I'll let Senator answer, then I'll follow.
Okay, thank you.
I want to make sure that hospitals aren't going to want to segregate mental illness out of the hospital system. It's like, yes, we know mental illness doesn't make money, and we know hospitals want services that are going to pay the money. But not all illnesses are going to be able to provide you the reimbursement that, you know, we can't segregate mental illness out. That's my main concern. And so I just hope that you're not indicating that you just don't want to have any psychiatric beds and not deal with mental illness at all, because in this community approach, it has to be integrated. I mean, we need hospitals. We need our community base. We need our state hospitals. So, you know, I'm not sure you're indicating that you just don't want to take care of have psychiatric beds or not.
Oh, Senator Anderson, not at all. In fact, I can speak for my hospital, and I'll let Dr. May speak for his, but St. Charles has a philosophy of care that we believe that the emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being of the individual plays a role in all types of care. And the mental health component that we provide is integral to that, because it feeds everything we do, from cardiac care to trauma to cancer, everything we do. And having a vibrant mental health unit is part of that. Where we get very concerned, specifically, and we address this in our written testimony, is with the statutory care that we're required to provide for the involuntary folks who come into our facility before being civilly committed, and the fact that we're not addressing whether or not the resources for that care are adequate within the state to support the state hospital, that involuntary care. And also, hospitals aren't prepared to subsidize care that is statutorily mandated. We provide charity care. We all do that, and we do that for voluntary patients through our criterion for our community. But when we're asked and then to subsidize statutorily mandated care for someone who lives in Clatsop County because there's not a bed anywhere else, that's very difficult for us to do.
And I think, just to follow up, we as a system need to really be looking, too, at the best, the most cost-effective way of delivering this system. And that's why I was getting a little bit paranoid thinking that you might not want to have any psychiatric beds, because revenue, it has to be cost efficient, and if we can use the systems that are already in place but work together. But I agree, you don't want the big box. We need to be working together.
We'll go to Senator Winters and see if there's any last pressing questions. We'll go to Representative Jensen, and then I think we'll need to move on.
Just a brief comment, because what this actually says is that we're looking at it from a system standpoint, that this body, particularly the legislative body, will need to make some very thoughtful decisions. And, you know, those of us who are on this panel, whether we're talking about the community delivery system, whether we're talking about, you know, the development of where facilities will be sited. But I'm going to go back to a comment that Robin made, and she referenced in 1988, Goldsmith, she referenced the 2004. Those of you who have not read the report to the governor and the legislature by the Mental Health Task Force, and then we have the master plan that you need to do so, because what we're really talking about is the legislature talking about not only siting, but you're talking about community-based home-based services, which also includes hospitals and others, and looking at the mental health system as a system holistically. So I just need to put that on record for those of us who are in the legislature, and as we move down the road of talking about what's before us, that you keep that in mind as well, because, you know, it is systems.
Representative Jensen.
If I can change direction just a little bit. Dr. Henderson, I think you mentioned when we look at Eastern Oregon, I guess I'm not changing direction because that's all I've been talking about. When we look at Eastern Oregon, you know, we need to look at, from your experiences, especially at, you know, at St. Charles. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. From your experiences there, that we need to be creative, we need to be can you elaborate just shortly a little bit more on that, what specific types of things maybe, and part of my discussion is or concern here is coming from the conversation that I had with Mr. Dropp at St. Anthony's in Pendleton. St. Anthony's, of course, 12 years or something ago, had a few psychiatric beds. They dropped the beds, you know, for the members of the committee because they couldn't afford them. Mm-hmm. They weren't, you know, they weren't paying. And as a consequence, I think some, you know, I've heard comments from a number of people about in the discussions here that St. A's were just adamantly against and would not have any psychiatric beds, and my conversations with Mr. Dropp were that probably wasn't true, but that there needed to be some sort of some type of other relationship with other providers. There needed to be the development of some critical mass, I suppose, in order to, you know, to maybe not make this profitable, but to make it less unprofitable so that they could afford the luxury of providing psychiatric. So I'm really curious about your statement there and whether it's something we need to pursue.
It's an odd noise. Thank you, Representative Jensen, for the opportunity to discuss that. Chair Goldberg. I'll give you a very specific example. One of the levels of care that we're able to provide in Western Oregon is called the post-acute intensive treatment services level of care, and it's a subacute level of care that often is a alternative for folks who could build a treatment plan for 30 to 90 days and avoid being civilly committed in the state hospital. So they're folks who come under the jurisdiction and those issues that contain them in a facility for the long term. But right now, current regulations state that you have to kind of have a different level of care than an acute care hospital. So somebody on a PATES level of care who could be diverted from the state hospital can't come to St. Charles. We could build the infrastructure. We could build all those other types of things. We have asked OMHAS for a review of that, and so we're already in process with that to see if we can blend acute and subacute licenses in one facility. But Eastern Oregon could not support and would not want to support a 16-bed PATES level unit. There's just not enough volume. 3 or 4 beds attached to another unit would be fine. And I think there's a variety. That's just one small example of how we could use multi-use facilities as we go below the acute level of care. In my discussions with Dennis Burke at Good Shepherd in Hermiston, when we were talking about siting a facility in Hermiston, he was looking at acute and subacute levels of care married together. But again, we required some of those variances that we would need support. And I'm not sure if it's state or federal variances. I'm really not sure. And I know OMHAS is looking at that and intends to get us an answer in the near future. So that explains that. If I may divert for just 2 seconds, there's one thing I forgot to...
If it is brief.
It's brief.
Okay.
Of key importance to you as a site selection committee is the locations you choose in relationship to an acute care facility, an existing acute care facility. You need to make sure that when you're siting these hospitals, you're siting them close to facilities, acute general medical hospitals that have the infrastructure to support what you're talking about. And I would encourage you, that is something that is of grave concern to the OPIC members who've been tossed around as potential viable sites, that you work with those specific hospitals when you're looking to site them. And I did leave that out. But does that answer your question, Representative Jensen? Thank you.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much for both the testimony as well as for taking the time to come, and I'm certain we'll be working together as we move out into the future. So thank you.
Thank you.
We're going to call three people, Lou Kronenberg, Randy Davis, and Joe Thurman. If you're all still here.
Say that. Just to get on the record.
Last time I said it on the record.
Great. And we'll start with Lou, and then Randy, and then Joe, and thank you for coming. And I know we've gone a little bit longer with that first panel than we had anticipated, so I would ask your indulgence to try and keep your remarks to a few minutes, and then we can have some opportunity for questions. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman and committee, I'm just here to say today that, we've...
Could you introduce yourself?
Oh, I'm sorry. Lewis Kronenberg, MHD-1 at the Oregon State Hospital, also local president at SEIU. I'm just one person. There's 840 people that I represent, and they're very hardworking people at this hospital. We just want to make sure whatever site you choose, to wherever you put this, that you continue to give them the quality of care that we have provided for them for the last 15, 20 years in not so great conditions. You've visited our hospital, you've seen what we work with, the people that work with these patients do a fantastic job in these situations. We work on units that are sometimes 100 degrees in the hallways. But we're able to keep the therapeutic value up for these patients. We talk about long-term care. Well, if you're going to have long-term care, you're going to have folks that have been around for a while to deal with these folks and to get to know these folks. It takes a long time to get trust from these folks. So that's one of the things I just want to think about is you think about a site for this new hospital, that you don't put it so far away that some of us like myself would not be able to continue to work there. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
And I just want to take one moment to thank you for a couple of things. One is, thank you and everyone else at the hospital for the work that you do in providing excellent care. That oftentimes in these discussions, particularly when we're talking about bricks and mortar and buildings, we forget that in the end this is primarily about the people that we serve and the kind of care that we deliver, and we've got to keep in mind our patients and those who provide the care. And so thank you for reminding us of that, and thank you for the care that you give.
Like I said, we've grown up, a lot of us have grown up with each other at that hospital. Yeah. Patients, staff, we spend a lot of Christmases together. We spend a lot of birthdays and stuff like that. That's one thing I just don't want you to forget, that you can't just move this hospital and put it someplace and expect to bring in new staff and everything click. It doesn't work that way.
Thanks.
Please. Hi, my name is Randy Davis, a mental health therapist too. I work in the forensics department, men's maximum security admission. I want to thank you for all being here, and I kind of want to stay on subject that we're here to talk about site criteria, and Dr. Goldberg's trying really hard to do that. So I have some just specific things in talking about when we're talking about building hospitals that meet the criteria for the Valley and then for Eastern Oregon as well. First of all, for a larger hospital, we already have the largest hospital located here in Salem. So a couple of major points for keeping it in this area would be that we have a cost-effective mechanism already in place. We already have the staff that work within the system already in place here. And we also have a number of public lands owned by the state in the Salem area. In particular, there's land by the OSCI Correctional Facility that meets the 100-acre criteria set up by the researchers easily, and if not more. The second part of that is that the Salem area is still uniquely, being the second largest populated area of the state, also offers livability and a lifestyle for people who would want to work in a large psych facility. We still have a relatively low cost of living. You can potentially still buy property here and own a house in this area and develop a future for yourself in the Salem area working in a job of modest income that would come from the state hospital employment. The point about the land population and all that is interesting enough, but like the committee, the KMD architecture people said, is the cost of land was not included in the estimates, and the state owning several parcels of property in the Salem area will decrease and create cost effectiveness. And we all know when we're pinching millions of dollars out of a billion-dollar budget, cost effectiveness is right up there. And when we can talk about saving the state $30 or $40 million in site selection for 100 acres of land, I don't know if any of you have priced 100 acres of land in the Portland area, you might want to rethink that one. The second is the patient population. I want to talk about patient population. We've got diverse patient population throughout the state, mostly, like they said, most of it comes from the valley. In particular, I want to talk about two distinct patient populations at the state hospital. The first patient population is a forensics population that is sent there under guilt except for insanity and held there by the state psychiatric review board, which is much like post-prison supervision. Those people are mandated to sentences and are required to do treatment to be able to be released. They represent the biggest block of patients. The second population I'd like to talk about is the people who become potentially under the board, which are the people there for 370 evaluations. All these people, both sets of these people, are adjudicated in the court system. Prior to coming to the state hospital, are housed in correctional facilities throughout the state. All the county jails are their primary psych resources while they're waiting to be adjudicated. The state has a system set up to where they call it the hub. I don't know if you guys are familiar with the corrections hub. Every patient, every person from county jail that gets adjudicated gets brought to Salem to go to the state pen and get sent out to different places. Every county in the state uses the hub for transportation for PSRB patients and 370 patients. So the example I like to use of the hub is I work on the men's maximum security 370 unit. I have a gentleman who passes the evaluation on Monday. He misses the transport day on Tuesday for the hub because it takes time to put paperwork together, contact the judge and the counties from, tell him he's coming back. So his paperwork goes through on Wednesday, and he's now sitting for an extra 8 days waiting for the hub to pick him up. If we site locate this hospital anywhere except for the hub, counties only transport people from one county to another when they have someone to take. So let's say I have a gentleman from Klamath County, and my hospital is located in Multnomah County. Well, Klamath County doesn't have anybody from Multnomah County. Well, you guys can hold on to him there at the hospital for a couple of weeks until we can find an officer who will work overtime to drive from Kay Falls all the way up to Portland to pick him up. Whereas now, Klamath Falls is required to use the hub on Tuesdays, and they already have officers in place that go to the hub every Tuesday and pick up patients and pick up other correctional inmates. So the hub is just another crucial part of keeping the state hospital, at least the 370 part and most of the forensics part, within the Salem area. The use of the integrated system with corrections for people who have to be adjudicated and awaiting adjudication is essential for continuum of care within the forensic system until we change the forensic system. But currently right now, I don't see the law coming down being changed. We have a lot bigger issues with the civil commits to change rather than the forensic system. The next thing I'd like to talk about is usability, especially for land in the Salem area. Recently, I don't know if you've driven out by the Oregon State Pen, there was development of the soccer field and the baseball diamond adjacent to the land of the pen. At first, I was going, oh, my gosh, why are we putting the soccer field right where kids can see the state penitentiary? But now that I've looked at it, it's a very nice facility. It's very user-friendly, and it's going to accommodate a lot of use. Large land area in Salem, especially in the land that it abuts out on Amsville Highway in Coober, could easily be made into a park-like setting, which they also talked about, having some usability to bring people, saying, listen, a state hospital is not a bad thing. And the same thing goes for the state pen, having a soccer field and a baseball diamond near to it. It decreases that overall fear of a large facility being in your area, especially if you have a usability for that. And those kind of things are the thing that large land parcels in Salem offer us. When we talk about people wanting to live near their families, this is a hard thing to talk about. Salem is centrally located for everyone in the valley. It's not only the state capital, but it sits closely off of I-5. Any land in Salem is easily accessible within the state. And that to me, especially since the bulk of the population is north, we are an hour from Portland and an hour from Eugene, the next two largest population centers. So centrally located for the bulk of the population. And there was some talk about patients needing to be near their families and not needing to be near their families. And I believe Representative Jensen brought up a point about taking people out of this environment of drug use and putting them in a different environment. But there's a lot to be said for that, and there's a lot to be said for family support. They're both sides have good arguments. I've worked at the hospital long enough to see where family support's been a great thing, where if they didn't have their families, they would have never gotten out. But I've also seen horrible family support where they just continue the lifestyle that they're used to. I mean, best example I have is a patient at the state hospital got a stereo from a family member. Family member inside of the stereo cabinets puts 24 cans of chewing tobacco in there. And luckily we ripped the stereo apart and found it and said, whoa, wait a minute, that's contraband, which is a Class C felony. You can't do that. So we have this, you know, that's a mixed bag as well. I'd like to talk about Eastern Oregon. Currently we have a 60-bed facility in Eastern Oregon. It used to be much larger. I think one of the myths about Eastern Oregon is that that they don't serve the people from Eastern Oregon. There's not enough service. I've been at past committee hearings under the Health and Human Service Committee, and Dr. Sundagiri, who used to be the chief medical officer at Eastern Oregon, testified that they do a huge amount of direct admissions in Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center. I'm not exactly sure of the numbers, but I'm sure that they do take direct admissions. I'm almost positive of that right now. I think I confirmed that from our current superintendent, saying that they still do take direct admissions. I'm not sure of their numbers. So when we're talking about 16 beds in Eastern Oregon, we're talking about stifling the ability to help those acute care hospitals have direct admissions of people that are not subacute, that are acute, that these hospitals can't get. I feel for the private nonprofit hospitals because originally when they set up these regional centers, when they closed the county admission system, they were supposed to get reimbursed for their patients. I don't know if that's still happening or if it's happening at a level that can accommodate and help them do the job they want to do. So when we're talking about Eastern Oregon, I feel that some caution should be raised that 16 beds might not be sufficient for the number of turnovers. And the real example I like to use, chronically mentally ill people living in rural areas have repeat admissions. And that has not been addressed, the number of repeat admissions by people who live in rural areas. It's very easy to treat someone in a rural area that has family support. They have some kind of psychotic break. They get treated, and they go back to their families. And this is a continuing over and over and over situation to where we could potentially see readmission after readmission. And, you know, not to say that any one psych hospital sees one patient 100 times in a year, but that's the potential is there. So when we're talking about readmissions, we're talking about people who need that continuum of care. And so, in my opinion, when we talk about Eastern Oregon, I'm part of the union of the people that work in Eastern Oregon, the Eastern Oregon Psychiatric Center in Pendleton, and they tell me, we have repeat admissions. We do the best we can, they come out, they leave, and they come back. And that 16 beds will easily get filled up by people leaving and coming back, in my opinion. Also, people mention states that work. Ohio, I don't know if anybody ever saw the OPB special called The New Asylum when they looked at the Ohio system and you saw group therapy in cages. Please, I don't want us to move that direction where we have a big corrections psych facility and they move and get stabilized and go back to the penitentiary. I truly believe that there should be some distinction between psychiatric patients and corrections patients. I believe that there are people who have both situations. I believe there are people that are in the psych facilities that should be in correction facilities. Same goes for people in corrections facilities that should be in psych facilities. And I think that it would behoove the state to have an integrated system where physicians and clinical and specialists that can look at things, psychologists, doctors, nurses, who can look at those people and say, you know, psychologically, they should be at a state hospital. Psychologically, they should be in the penitentiary. And we all, people who work in the psychiatric field, know that we have different accesses, we have different diagnoses that can be interpreted as mental illness and as just antisocial behavior.
Randy, could I, in the interest of time, ask if
you could...
I'm just finishing right now.
That'd be great.
The last thing I want to talk about was mixing populations, and I believe that a large facility in Salem would be capable of mixing populations, not only forensic, neuropsych, and civil commit, but we also have transitions of patients who go from forensics to neuropsych to civil commit, all in the same time. Forensics patients get over 60, they become medically unstable, they need to have... Well, I'm really hurrying here. They need to have medical care. They go to the geropsych units, or they time out under the PSRB and go to the civil commitment system. So, and I just want to make sure that currently that we have a potential for a really good site opportunity in Salem. We already have a workforce in place, and we already have a community that's accepting of large institutions. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Joe to make his comments, then we'll open it up for questions.
Okay, and I'll make mine real brief. My colleagues have hit on all the main topics. My name is Joseph Thurman. I'm a registered nurse at the State Hospital. And what I did want to bring up to the attention of the panel was the fact that we have approximately 140 doctors and nurses at the State Hospital that live and work in this area, and that we have probably the biggest facility for psych treatment and staff in the Salem area, and I would ask that they look seriously at the Salem area and placing the site.
Thanks, Joe. Let's see if there are questions from the panel.
Just a comment or a request.
Okay, Senator Monsanto, and then we'll go to Representative Dalton.
I think it's important, uprooting employees is a big concern of mine. But I would like to know where the families or where the patients actually come from. Where are their home? Where is their actual residence? Because I think that is really extremely important to have. And so as a legislator, I will want that.
We'll get that. I believe we've actually got a lot of that already done.
Well, two comments, since we don't really have time to go into questions. The first comment is I want to thank this panel representing the locals that work at the State Hospital through these processes that we've been looking at the system in the hospital in particular, and some of the challenges of working at the hospital, at the workplace, some violence that takes place on the part of patients with people who work at the hospital. I feel like these gentlemen here are pretty articulate advocates for their colleagues and partners in this whole process. I know that they participated in the Master Plan Steering Committee, so I appreciate their hard work and the care that they provide. I wish that we had an opportunity to touch on some of those populations within the hospital. We don't have that time, but I was struck by the comment about the types of the mix of patients at the hospital, and it occurs to me that we have this issue about people who are in the hospital who are actually criminals and commit criminal behavior and prey upon people who are sick in the hospital and ill and need are receiving the treatment and so forth. And I wish we could get into that. We can't, but I wanted to get that on the record, that we have some patients at the hospital that are victimizing other patients because they're more of a criminal, criminal behavior, or that's the type of issue that brings them to the hospital. And I had expressed my interest before in seeing what we could do with corrections in some kind of a joint facility or shared facility so that we could, manage people properly. And that's a whole other discussion, but I know that might not work, that model, but some issues that I wish we could get into that I want on record.
Thank you. Senator Gordley, then Senator Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Comment, and then Representative Bill.
If we could add to Senator Mons Anderson's request, I'd like to know, I'd like information that tells us where the current workforce lives, so that we're clear about impacts in that regard.
Got that info.
And also, I'd like to know, Mr. Davis, I didn't catch what your... What your job title?
Oh, I'm mental health therapist too.
Thank you.
So the winners.
I'd like to add my thank you to the staff for their input and for being here. But also, this is not the first time that they've come before this illustrious body, and they routinely assist us in our deliberation. And I'd like to thank you because I understand fully some of the challenges that you have out at State Hospital. But I would also like to know just where, upon release, because our community here in Salem, the impact is not only when we talk about staff here, but the also we have families that come to be with their, whether you're talking about correctional institution or state hospital. I'd like to know when the patients are released.
Where they go.
Where they go. Whether they're going back to their communities or whether they're remaining here in Salem. So that will be another piece that I would like. As we talk about planning, and of course my good colleagues from Salem, we have been meeting these challenges for a lot of years, both in terms of community support as well as developing staff and some of those other infrastructure issues. So, you know, I know that others raised this not in my backyard, and we've had it in our community for a long time. So I guess Senator Anderson and I was talking about it one day about other siting issues, and I said that legislators will have to work with their communities so that their communities understand, as well as we do here in Salem, what the needs are, whether you're talking about developing the professionals or whether you're talking about developing group homes and all those other systems. So, but we would like to know where the patients leave when they leave the hospital.
We will get that info. Representative Boone, I believe you had a question or a comment.
Sorry, yeah. Well, I don't know if you guys were here when the architect gave you very nice compliment and commented on the fact that when they were working with people in, at the hospital, staff, professionals, that you were all very professional and very cooperative, and that you, you know, exhibited your loyalty to your patients and dedication to your jobs and under some pretty amazing circumstances in some cases. And I recognized Randy from your shirt, I think, from the committee during session last time. When you came, and, you know, that was a really tough committee hearing. I remember hearing about all the stuff that you guys go through. I want to say I'm really proud of you, and it just does my heart good to know that our patients here get this kind of care. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you all. I'm proud that you work at the hospital and work for DHS. Thank you. Going to call two individuals, Ms. Danelle Chapman and Ms. Becky Child, to come forward. And as they're coming forward, I just wanted to remind the panel, apropos of all the discussion this morning, both about the larger mental health care system as well as issues about where we might put a facility, that we're unfortunately not doing either, that we're developing the criteria, we're not actually choosing a site, as well as regarding the larger mental health care system, where it's not within our purview to deal with a lot of the issues that have been brought up, but I think we have a lot of great opportunities to do that, and it's great that these issues have been raised. And with that, I'm going to turn things over to Ms. Chapman, if you'd introduce yourself, and then we'll, after that, go to the file.
My name is Donnell Chapman, and I have worked at the State Hospital for 21 years. I have started out in the Jarrell Head Trauma Unit, went to the Sex Offenders Unit before it became, well, lost its funding, and evolved into our last transitional unit before they go out into the community. Randy covered many of the issues that I wanted to speak to you on. However, the one thing that I wanted to make a special point of saying is mental illness is a revolving door. We don't cure them. We just get them stabilized, and then they go back out into your community. And that is something I really believe that we are never going to change with education. Our community doesn't want them out there. They try their best. We take them out on passes. We do all the things that we're supposed to do. But there's always going to be that veil in between. Salem has done it for how many years? They know it. They're used to it. And all the resources are here. They are developing group homes. That's the answer to the other questions. Where do they go? They go out to group homes under the PSRB. do some of the same programs that they do within the hospital, hopefully not get revoked and come back to our door. I was also present at the hospital when we had the MAPLE unit, which was the emergency trauma unit when they first came in, two police fold, and they'd bring them in there before they took it apart and said, let's put it out into the hospitals and things. We had a centralized place there where special staff could deal with the residents that was there, and then they went through the program within the hospital. I believe our numbers at that time were probably over 1,000. It worked. It wasn't the best, but it worked. When you're choosing a site, the number one thing that we need is space. And the number two is the cost. I'm also a taxpayer. And I don't really want to pay several billion dollars for all this kind of stuff when we have facilities here that can be used. So that's really all I had to tell you. I can answer any questions about the population or any of that kind of stuff if you'd like.
Thanks, Ms. Chapman. And I think that the comments that everybody made about the staff, I hope you feel that they were equally directed at yourself. Are there other questions? Thank you. I'm going to turn things over to Becky Child. Becky, thanks for coming and appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Chair Goldberg and fellow committee members, my name is Becky Child, and I'm one of the adult co-chairs of the Planning and Management Advisory Council that advises the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services. I also am someone who's used mental health services and very easily could have been a patient with OSH. I'm also very cognizant that there is a slight but real possibility that I could end up there at some point in the future, though I hope that never happens. And as you consider criteria for siting a new state hospital, I would ask that you hold what is best for the people that will be served in that new state hospital as the first criteria. And as you determine the other criteria to add, you first ask yourselves how those additional criteria will enhance the first criterion. So what do people with psychiatric disabilities want? They want a home, meaningful activities such as volunteer work, paid work, and education. And they want friends and family. That should be the guiding principle in the criteria. How does the future site facilitate the recovery process for these individuals? How does it help them attain a home, meaningful activities, competitive paid employment and volunteering in school, friends, and family? The hospital site should be adjacent to population centers to make it easy for friends and family to visit. Generally, major population centers in Oregon have access to public transportation. Transportation is a huge barrier for people with psychiatric disabilities, and especially in the rural areas where the public transportation dollars are more scarce. Being the advocate that I am, I have to wonder, as I wrote this testimony last night, I really was having a hard time trying to put my thoughts together, and I finally figured out why. I really have a hard time with the idea of saying build a new box. There are, I think, when I look at the cost to build a new box, we're looking at $324 million. That is a conservative estimate. That's a third of $1 billion. If we gave that money to every person that's in the state hospital and the rest of the Oregon population, what would they do with it? I'm really curious. I wonder if they would spend it any better than we would. I really am just not convinced that building a new box is the best way to do this. Also, in addition to, because I am an advocate and I have been working with people who are in the state hospital, in the community, and have gone back and forth, and I have to tell you that, well, many of them have had some positive experiences while they're at the state hospital. Nearly every single person has had plenty of negative experiences, and I don't mean to bring this down on the staff, but unless we address the challenges that are with the staffing issue, address the power issues that go on in that hospital, and make it so that it's not such a closed system, we aren't doing anything and anyone any good, and I don't want us to sit here and pretend that we are. And so The other thing that I'm also involved in is with the Cremains Committee. And while I don't have any specific recommendations personally about what I would like to see done with the Cremains, the only thing I hope is that you don't take our history from us. We have been forgotten, demeaned, demoralized, degraded for too many years. We are no different than you. we've just been labeled and diagnosed. The ways that we've been treated. I really don't understand how people can treat people in that manner. It just boggles my mind. So how do you decide what criteria to include to make these decisions? Ask yourselves, if my mother, wife, father, brother, sister, cousin, aunt, uncle, whoever is your loved one and family member, were in this facility, is this where you would want them to be? If they need mental health services, is this the place you want to fund? If it's not, then you've got the wrong answer. It should be good enough for the people who work there and the people who fund the system to want to send their loved ones there when they need help. And I can tell you that there aren't hardly any systems in the state that I would want to send my loved one, let alone me, go to. They talked about the acute care system here briefly, and I'll tell you that I've been in nearly every Portland area hospital, and I will never go back again. If I need hospitalization, I go out of state. I can't. So there are quality of care issues, and if you don't include the people who use the services in these discussions, then you're missing the boat again, and you're repeating the past. And just in closing, some of the comments that have been made earlier made me think of some other resources. I've sent each of you by email three articles that are from about Italy, and they have totally eliminated their state institutions in Italy and gone to only acute care settings. I don't know exactly how they address the forensics issue, but it's worth looking into. But I thought it might be of interest for you to take a look at a place that eliminated state institution. We are kidding ourselves if we think we can do quality care in institutions. Look at the nursing homes. There's a big write-up in the paper about the quality of care that people get in the nursing homes. Institutional care just does not care for people in the way that they need to be cared for. People have talked about the NIMBY issue. New Zealand, and I'll send you this email link also, has initiated a public awareness campaign around discrimination and stigma that is by far the best thing I have ever seen to address this issue. I would love to see something like that happen in Oregon. And so you'll get that in email. The infusion of dollars into community services. If you took those $325 and infused it into community services, I would I'd love to be able to work with some of that, with folks in the community where they live every day, to give people a home, to have a place to live. And the length of stay. I mean, in the PACE programs, that's another issue. They are designed to work with folks to get them back in the community within 90 days. Well, I realize that there are some people who may need longer-term care. If that's not the overarching philosophy of a new state hospital, then what are we doing? The Supreme Court said in the Olmstead decision that holding people in institutions is an act of discrimination, keeping them segregated from their communities. If we are not working with them in the communities where they live and where they want to live, then we're discriminating against them. The other thing that I would also just like to say is that I am part of the effort to try and transform the mental health system, and it's going to get transformed come hell or high water if I have anything to do with it. But the other thing is around trauma-informed services. The things that happen at state hospital are in violation of the OMAS policy of trauma-informed care. How do we hold the state accountable, the DHS accountable, the state hospital accountable, and the community services accountable for providing trauma-informed care, where we don't re-traumatize people when we move them from level of care to level of care? I can't tell you how many people I work with who come out of the state hospital who want nothing more to ever do with mental health professionals ever again. And some of them don't have a choice because they're still under custody of the PSRB. That says something to me. It says we have a huge problem and we need to address it. And so anyway, that's all my comments. Thanks.
Becky, thank you. I really, and I think all of us really appreciate
your comments as well as what's been your advocacy throughout. I've known you for the last year, and I really greatly value the perspectives that you bring, and thank you for making us aware. And I think your comments, particularly about the need to address the issues of stigma and power and to create quality, dignified care, are things that we need to look towards. And I think when it comes to citing criteria, you may have given us the best criteria that we could think about, which is to think about where we or our families would want to be. So thank you. I see if people on the panel have questions or comments. Senator Mona Sanderson and Senator Cordley.
Becky, your comments are so valuable, and I want you to know how important it was for you as an individual to come before this committee and share your thoughts. And the one thing that just stands out in the second paragraph, what is best, we need to hold what is best for the people that will be served in the new state hospital as the first criteria. And that to me is key. And also, I just need the committee to know, she has served on the memorial committee that we have for the cremation, and she worked so hard in getting input from other mentally ill or had a history with mental illness, let's put it that way, had a history, they're not necessarily mentally ill, had a history of mental illness, and have given so much input, and we have been able to really take the information that actually she has gathered and implementing that, and that will be shared, I think, with the siting or the building committee. I forget what phase that's going to fit into, but thank you.
Thank you.
Good job.
Senator Gordon?
Yeah. Becky Child, you have an eloquent and powerful voice.
Thank you.
And you have used it to speak truth to power today. I also want to honor and acknowledge another piece of work that I'm aware of. You created a document that describes and defines emergency preparedness, approaches to emergency preparedness for people living with psychiatric disabilities. And your work has been shared with the State Office of Emergency Management. It's been shared with the Multnomah County Office of Emergency Management. And your work is going to be incorporated in our overall emergency preparedness activities statewide. So I want to thank you for that. One of the most powerful voices I've ever heard, and I say one because another one is sitting
I know.
Back there with you, your partner, Tyrone Waters. God bless you, and thank you.
Good job.
Are there comments or questions? Thank you both. Really appreciate it. We have three more individuals, and what I would suggest with the okay of the committee is that we continue on for about another 15 minutes and hear from the rest of the public testimony, and then take an hour break and then reconvene for the remainder of the agenda. Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
With that, could we have Gina Furman Nickel and Betsy Earls and Chloe Allen. Great. Thank the three of you. I think that I'm just going to go down the order in which people had signed up, so we'll start with Gina, and then Betsy, and then Chloe.
So thank you.
Gina?
Chair Goldberg, committee members, for the record, my name is Gina Furman Nickel. I'm the executive director of the Association of Community Mental Health Programs. First of all, let me say that I probably need to say double what Becky said. Becky has been working very hard with the community mental health programs to get us to understand that we need to take a look at people that use our services. I don't say mentally ill anymore. I say people who use our services. that we need to think about them first, because that's exactly why we're in business. So we would underscore that as a site criteria to think about that. With that being said, we have actually discussed the State Hospital Master Plan, our association, quite extensively. And at this time, we support option number two. We like the consideration for the two-bed or the two 16-bed secure residential facilities in Eastern Oregon. It's very, very important that we keep on with this process and don't stall, or we could be here a lot more years. So I just want to encourage you to keep moving forward. Also, in considering the criteria, we would ask that you again assess what's happening in Central Oregon. If you specifically look at Deschutes County and Crook County and the fast pace that they are growing, I want to make sure that we need to really weigh the factors and make sure that we're building where we need to be building. I know that Central Oregon is really growing. Another criteria to look at is Oregon State Hospital has a really unique opportunity to be a teaching hospital and a center of excellence. And so I would look at perhaps some proximity to some universities or to community colleges that really enhance the nursing programs. We've talked about that with OHSU and some other universities, and I would keep that also on your mind. Also, one more thing, and I'm going to wrap it up here, is that the campuses that we're talking about total about 980 beds or more. I don't think that you can even look at building the new box unless you look at the criteria for funding the back end and the front end community services program, such as local outpatient, supported housing, supported employment, crisis respite, and yes, the acute care hospitals. We have talked about funding in the communities for a number of years. There have been several, and I do mean several, studies, from the governor's reports to the report that AOCMHP put out, others. And what happens is those dollars, KMD even did a preliminary look at what community services would cost. The problem is there are hundreds of million dollars a biennium, and it scares people, so you just put those figures away and don't even look at them. I'm asking you, in your criteria for the site selection for the state hospital, please consider some thoughts towards putting some funding into the community setting in order to fund the new boxes. In 07 and 08, 09, the bienniums, you're really going to have to take a look at recommending not only the site criteria for the state part of the system, but also the funding for the local part of the system. As you know, the Association of Community Mental Health Programs would be glad to work with you in any part that you see fit for us to do so.
Thank you, Gina.
Me.
Betsy.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Betsy Earls, representing today the Oregon Psychological Association. The Oregon Psychological Association represents psychologists all throughout Oregon who are actively involved in the delivery of mental health care across a wide spectrum of services. As such, the OPA is keenly interested in plans to revise the system of care and, of course, the purpose of your hearing today, the siting and building of a new state hospital. We support you in this process, and we'd like to highlight a few items for your consideration. We believe that the building of a new state hospital supports the recovery of the mentally ill consumers that we serve. There are approximately 30 psychologists who practice at the Oregon State Hospital in Salem, and we estimate that 10% of all psychologists in Oregon serve the severely and persistently mentally ill at OSH, in county mental health clinics, as commitment investigators, and through the acute hospital system. So that's our connection to the Oregon State Hospital redesign process and conversation. New facilities for the Oregon State Hospital will provide better opportunities for recovery by improving the living and therapeutic conditions for our consumers. Member psychologists that are employed at OSH look forward to having the space to effectively utilize the tools of their trade
diagnostics, testing, therapy, supervision, and organizational consulting to help their consumers recover in a supportive environment. The OPA appreciates the attention to the phase two, that the phase two master plan pays to providing needed access to care, which is closer to the homes of the communities, the customers that we serve. And I think we've heard quite a bit about that today already. As psychologists, OPA members are acutely aware of the importance of family and community in that recovery process. And we fully support the efforts to place smaller facilities in strategic locations that will allow consumers to be supported by local resources and provide opportunities for vocational and social interactions. These resources are keys to successful integration back into the community. The OPA also supports the stated master plan commitment to provide a system of care that can support the severely and persistently mentally ill populations of the OSH and help them move out of these higher levels of care back into their home communities. There's been conversation today about the 1988 Governor's Mental Health Task Force, which outlined critical needs for these resources, as has subsequent mental health task forces. And we're hopeful that you will see the wisdom in fully funding the community-based support systems that are needed to make the Oregon State Hospital redesign a success. There are a couple areas of concern that we'd like to highlight before we wrap up. First of all, we need to encourage you to consider options that are the most facilitative for the consumer populations that you'll serve. And this is a consideration that we need to balance against the other idea of the least restrictive level of care possible. We're very supportive of the idea of the least restrictive environment for care, and we believe that Oregon consumers deserve the opportunity to live in their communities of choice in the least restrictive settings that are allowable by the conditions of their illness as well as their legal status. But that being said, we're aware that the least restrictive environment is not always the most facilitative environment for recovery. And by that, we mean, for example, somebody might have the capacity to be served in a very low level of care, but would not actually be able to engage in supported employment opportunities or develop the skills that are needed to live independently if the focus is placed on the least restrictive level of care. So what we would support is care that more focuses on facilitating a true or full recovery, so that a variety of different levels of care may be necessary to assist consumers in developing the abilities that they need to live active and fully engaged lives. So we hope that the concept of the most facilitative level of care will be the one that drives your deliberations and that you focus on the most. The second concern that we'd like you to pay some attention to is that we highly support the idea of patient-centered recovery that you've outlined in the report and that is currently purported to be the therapeutic model of choice. However, the OPA is also aware that the current funding model for the system of mental health care in Oregon and for consumers to participate in this recovery model makes it a little bit difficult to get into the system. In order to access needed services, especially indigent consumers must often decompensate to the point of involuntary acute hospitalization to meet their needs. This obviously doesn't allow them to manage their illness in the most effective way possible. One example of this problem is that by making voluntary acute hospitalization more available to indigent consumers, it would often be possible to avoid otherwise tragic and preventable decline that results in civil commitment. The current lack of funding for needed medications and therapy and the lack of community-based infrastructure to support the recovery model is going to hamper the success of the OSH redesign, and that's not a result that we're looking for, obviously. We implore you to view your role as the siting committee as more than just choosing the location for bricks and mortar. The building, we think is clear, can't stand alone. The Department of Human Services and the Office of Mental Health and Addiction Services have made substantial strides in recent years to develop community resources, but the Oregon State Hospital organizational structure and culture needs work as well. Improvements that are planned during the settlement of a recent lawsuit are only the beginning of renovating the staffing structure necessary to run an effective hospital. Providers of care in our state are currently stuck in a system that has substantially outlived its utility, and we ask that you consider the funding model for the system itself as seriously as you deliberate over the siting of bricks and mortar. As Gina mentioned about her organization, of course, the Psychological Association stands ready to support you and work with you in any process that we may be helpful. And we look forward to helping you with that.
Thank you.
Just
thank
a real quick question.
Sure.
Do we have the ability to get at least zip codes of all of the registered psychologists in the state and psychiatrists for that matter and clinical nurse specialists in mental health? It'd be nice, besides knowing where our patients are from, mm-hmm. where the staff is also, sure. if that would be possible to get.
Mr. Chair and Senator Montes-Anderson, we can get you the information for psychologists, and I'm sure it's available for other mental health.
We can work with the Board of Medical Examiners and the Board of Nursing to see what we can.
Mr. Chair, that's a really interesting request. You can lay the map, you can lay where people are versus where the professionals are going to serve them. I'd love to see that.
Mm-hmm. Include the professional counselors.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where is involved in
mental health?
Exactly. That's what I'm asking.
We can make those requests from the boards.
You would also have to lay on there because of the co-diagnosis of probably your alcohol and drug counselors as well.
Okay.
Big math.
No. I think there's a...
In order to get the best picture.
Right. Yeah. I think that it's certainly going to be something that maybe we as a... It may take a little time to get. I think those are issues that it seems information that the folks in DAS will need. If those become one of our criteria, they'll need that information to lay over what we come to look at against our criteria. And I think that's some of the discussion we'll be able to have this afternoon. So great suggestion.
It would be useful to the work group.
Yeah, or it's useful for all of us. So great suggestion. Ms. Allen, I have good news and bad news. The good news is you are not this one person standing between this committee and lunch, because I just wanted to let people know that, unfortunately, I was inaccurate. Not intentionally, but we had one more individual, Mr. Wells from the city of Salem, who had signed up to testify. So I don't know whether it's good news that you're the two people away or not, but we're certainly going to give you our time and attention. So turn things over to you.
Okay. My son is in the state mental hospital.
Could you please
identify? My son is Chloe Allen. Thank you. My son is in the state mental hospital. And I don't have such good things to say. But I did figure out, pencil out somewhat, and forgive any mathematical errors I've made in this. Correct me if I'm wrong in some of these. But I penciled out some of the costs, and I've looked at the treatment that my son has gotten, and I've tried to make sense of what's going on. A motel, a clean motel room, in many places is $40 a night. That's $1,200 a month. But I went to $60 a night. That's $1,800 a month. That's $21,600 a year. That includes two queen beds, their own bath, their own table, their own chair, their own dresser, their own TV, their own fresh air patio, their own control of heat and air conditioning, and it pays lights and water. Okay, so if the hospital now costs $133,000 a year, minus $21,600 a year, that leaves $111,400. And I'm trying to make sense of the horrors that we've experienced. But on $111,400 a year, it provides food that actually can heal the body, private therapy, art and music therapy, animal therapy, higher education, which he's been denied, and we paid for, was taken from us, vocational training, extensive on-the-grounds recreation, employment. The state hospital has been paid for decades. So I keep asking myself why deprivation therapy rules the day for the patients. They sit in the halls, and one flew over the cuckoo's nest where they breathe each other's feet or breathe each other's air at night. and they sit in the halls and twiddle their thumbs and wait all day for 1 hour in the yard. I'm not going to go any further. I get so mad, I just see red. On the comments about the forensic patients are caused. Many of them are flatly, blatantly caused. The cops refused two police holds when a hospital bed was open and the psychiatrist was on the phone begging for him to be sent to the hospital. The cops demanded that crimes be charged to get access to hospital care. Couldn't just be taken because he was acutely psychotic and acting and doing really intensely hospitalizationable behavior. We had to charge crimes. Criminal records absolutely do not reflect the person's actual behavior or crimes. Criminal records have become meaningless papers by which the cops can get on the evening news and show what a horrible person they have. It doesn't mean the person did a single thing in those records. I will be pushing for a public explanation for why the cops physically branded my son's face. I want the cop who cannot be prosecuted under a lie detector. I want a number of these things done under a lie detector because I have discovered authorities lie. And not sometimes, a lot. I want the cop to explain what chemicals were on the razor blade he used to brand my son's face. I want staff at the hospital to explain why, while they were gathering assault statistics, would move my son out of a peaceful room to a room where another patient had physically threatened him. It seemed to me that some staff were intentionally raising the assault instances. I want to know why dehumanizing, degrading, traumatizing strip searches are increased by the administrators. These are unnecessary strip searches. And this is not a healing attitude held by the administration at the hospital. Strip searches increase the need for drugs because they traumatize the patients. Second opinions for forced drugs is not a second opinion always. It's sort of like Bush and Rumsfeld giving each other a second opinion. It's a foregone conclusion. There is a lack of freedom to get fresh air. This creates claustrophobia. Childish bedtimes are not for patient health. Food, which can reduce the need for expensive, harmful drugs, is considered unnecessary. Let's be real clear. Oregon got an F on mental health care. It didn't get a C+. It got an F. Unlimited forced drugs got an A. A C+ average is nothing but public smoke. The only grade that matters is patient experience, and that is an F. My son had been stabilized on 0.5 milligrams of risperidol. Since then, drugs have been maliciously and recklessly forced. These drugs are excruciatingly painful, physically excruciatingly painful. They are torture, especially when they're not needed. These forced drugs caused another psychotic crisis, which we can't seem to get him out of. He is totally now destabilized. The drugs are, when I raise concerns, somehow it always gets back to staff, and retaliation is the name of the game. I'm not going away.
My child has been harmed.
Ms. Allen, thank you. I am sorry that your son has had the experience that he's had, and I understand the pain that you feel about that, and I hope that perhaps we could talk offline outside of this committee structure about how we can look at some of those issues, because they clearly are important, and thank you for bringing those to our attention.
It takes a lot of courage, Mr. Chair, for a mother to come forward and talk about the experience that you've had as a family. And I just want to honor your courage in coming forward. Thank you.
If no changes happen, I've wasted my time.
Change is going to happen, and you're going to be a part of making it happen. We all are. We can't accept anything less than that.
Any other comments or questions? Thank you all. Can I ask Mr. Wells? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Bob Wells, and I'm the city manager for the city of Salem, and I thank you very much. I'm sorry to be the one keeping you from lunch. What I wanted to just emphasize is that Salem, I think, is in a unique position in that we have been the city in the state that has dealt most, I think, with mental health issues. And a couple things that I would like to emphasize is, first, this is not an issue that we've had an opportunity to discuss with our city council. And so I'm speaking on my own this afternoon. I think that it's great that the state is addressing the mental health situation, because we can all support the need for modernizing it. And in the option that's been presented, option two, the thing that is we like is the fact that the mental health facilities, there's a recognition to distribute those among other cities in the state. We don't want to appear here as being not in my backyard. In fact, I think you can characterize it, we are the backyard currently. We want to be a partner in your discussions, and I think we bring a unique perspective to it. When we first heard about the study, we asked for a briefing, and the state was very good about coming to us and giving us good information. As a follow-up, we asked for the same information I think you've asked for, is, all right, are the patients that are coming to Salem staying here, or are they basically returning to the community? And the second thing we asked for was, are the employees who work at the state hospital living in Salem, or do they live in, what's the distribution of the employees? Because we are concerned about employees who are residents and citizens of our city. And as you can see from the information that was handed out, there is an impact of more discharges in Marin County than what we are contributing to the system by a significant amount. And I think if you add that along with some of the other institutions that we have in Salem, our concern is that we don't have the local infrastructure to really provide the kinds of services that the patients deserve, or in the case of the prison system, the inmates who are being discharged deserve. And so, taken cumulatively, that's our concern from a local government standpoint, being able to provide good service, to be a good partner with you, to make sure that we are well-trained, and that when people are in need, we recognize those needs, because that is the function that we serve. But with the impacts that's taken cumulatively, that's a concern that we have. like I said, I know you're talking about the siting criteria today, and I just wanted to emphasize that we do want to be a partner with you. We do want to talk about the distribution of facilities, and I think our main concern is the community facilities, because what we have found in the current system is that a lot of the community facilities end up being located in Salem because that's where the expertise is. And I think your questions about where are the professionals located is a good one, because I think that's where they tend to congregate. We know that from looking at maps of where sex offenders are located, for instance, they tend to be a lot of in Salem because that's where the treatment facilities are. So we respect very much the difficult job that you have. As I said, we want to be a partner with you. We're not saying don't locate anything here. We are the second largest city, and we have a role to play in delivering a good mental health system, and I think we can bring a unique perspective to it. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Wells. Let me see if there are questions.
Mm-hmm.
And we appreciate the collaborative nature of the city, and I think there'll be other opportunities for testimony and for dialogue. So,
okay.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. With that, we're going to stand adjourned till 1:25. That gives us an hour, and I think we can still hopefully be done by 3 o'clock this afternoon.
It's